Do you think that you witnessed war crimes taking place?
Probably. The ground assumption is that they are Hamas. And then if you go this way, you're bound to kill people that are not.
Now, in a rare interview, one soldier tells us about the reality he says he witnessed.
What kind of stuff would they say?
There are no uninvolved, only unarmed. This is something that I'm going to carry for the rest of my life.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Now, I know it's been a while since I've been gone, and I'm going to get into to start what actually was going on. And nothing crazy or anything, but I just didn't want to talk about it before it actually happened. But just to get started, guys, as you know, and I'll explain actually in a second here why things might be a little different. Let me know how the sound is. Let me know if everything looks okay, sounds okay. Bottom line, before we jump right into it, because I just want to get back into work. It's so great, by the way, to be back here and seeing you all again. It was probably one of the most difficult things I've done in a long time to not have worked in that period of time. Now, let me know how the sound is and everything else, guys. It looks like somebody's saying the sound is out of sync. Just let me know. But for those that hadn't caught the AM wake up show, bottom line was my family is moving or has moved, and we were in the process of, and I ultimately was going to be moving as well. We decided to get like a family compound kind of a setup, and we all, you know, the point being to sort of walk the walk. You know, like really try to live the life that we are always talking about. And the point being is our family wanted to try to do this together. My brother is now moving from where he was, also fleeing California like a lot of people. And that's ultimately what we were transitioning to. Now, I wildly undershot how difficult this was going to be, right? I mean, moving, I think I could have done by myself in a very small, I could have done it like I've done in the past, but having to involve everybody else with it and, you know, a lot of other things that came along with it, as well as the fact that I'm also moving to a new location for the studio, which is where I'm at now, which it's actually a really fantastic change because it is going to be a much larger location that I'm going to be gutting and making an entirely new TLAF hub type studio, but and it's exponentially cheaper than what I'm getting right now. So it's a plus plus all the way around. The only difference is I just didn't really factor in how much really needed to be done in regard to the studio itself, the location, the moving, taking care of my family. And as you all know, most importantly, making sure my wonderful puppy is not, you know, who's a dog now, wasn't wildly overstressed. And that was probably one of the hardest things for me is trying to deal with the timing and getting things set up with having to, you know, make sure everything went well with the family and my puppy and make sure everything's okay there. All that's being said, the reason this was so difficult, the timing was because there was just a lot of unforeseen things that happened, compounding timing issues and other things I've been juggling. So it's wonderful to be back to work, and I'm going to be, you know, going right back to it as I always have been. And today is the IDF whistleblower story we're going to start with. And it is absolutely damning. One of the most important things I think I've seen in this entire process. But that to me is one of the most, is one seemingly a very current story that I wanted to start with because I think it's powerful. But everything else is going to be things you probably heard over the last week that I'm just trying to get myself acclimated with. I want to discuss these things. I kind of wanted to get into, you know, some of the discussions, even stuff that, by the way, I had pulled aside before I was busy the entire week moving my family and myself. So there's going to be some redundancy in regard to some of the things you might have seen already, but points that I really thought were important that I wanted to make myself. Now, by the way, as well, I can't wait to show you guys what this is going to be. It might be another couple of weeks before I get it to where I want to. I might do a public thing, but I think last time what I did is I did a special walk around stream just for the, you know, people on our community, and maybe I'll do it for the Substack. By the way, I keep saying I'm going to, but I promise we'll go back to the founders meetings and the rest of the stuff we had there. There's just been a lot in flux. And again, the transition of me running that, I just wasn't prepared for. And a lot of stuff has changed. And, you know, a lot of positive stuff, though. There's a lot of great things happening. But I'm really excited to show you what we're going to be doing here. I'm going to be setting up the kind of situation where I had at the other office, at the other studio location. I always say office because I had my desk and stuff there as well, but it'll be the same desk and similar background. But I'm also going to be setting up a kind of a community type thing. Like, you know, think of like a longer setup with multiple people, multiple cameras. We'll be doing pirate stream out of this location. Courtney have already talked about it. And on that note, now that I mentioned that, she's been out of town doing a lot of great stuff. Make sure you check out Courtney's work. She's always doing great work. And again, we pride ourselves on the fact that we don't agree on everything, and yet we're still able to have wonderful conversations in depth. So make sure you check out her wonderful work. And we will be doing that here in this location mostly, I believe, and hopefully having more people join. And Catherine Austin Fitz has already said she's going to be joining, I think, pretty soon, actually, in regard to the third mic. And I think we've decided we are going to be filling that third mic with people coming through Tennessee. So, you know, other broadcasters, other people that, with important things to talk about. So let us know if you're coming through Tennessee and you'd like to join us. And on that note, I also will shout out that on the 27th, I don't think this is just an open to public thing. I think you have to get tickets and it's sort of like a fundraiser, but I'll be doing a food panel. And this is in coordination with the local chapter of Children's Health Defense, doing like a food panel where I'm going to be moderating, which I was honored to be asked. And it'll be a really important conversation with local people working on, you know, the soil and making sure we understand how it's supposed to be, you know, the kind of like the microbiome kind of conversation and how most of our soil is not like that, or the heavy metals in our food, or the glyphosate, or the endocrine disrupting chemicals, or how to grow certain types of food in the right way, or how to run a sustainable homestead, like amazing stuff. And I'm really looking forward to having this conversation. Again, honored to be part of it. You guys know well, those are things that are constantly on my mind. So all that aside, let's get into today. I don't know if we'll cover everything that I have lined up. I just kind of threw up a bunch of stuff that I really wanted to get into. A couple of segmented points I think are very important. And for people asking down below, the same address, I made sure we kept the same address in general to where you guys can mail in things. That probably won't change for the indefinite future, just because I want to make sure that's consistent. Thank you for asking, by the way. And so on that note, let's jump into some of this important conversation. Today's going to be primarily focused, as it has been generally over the last 6 months, on what's going on with Israel and Gaza, tangential points that connect to it. I want to talk about Iran, even though we're a little bit past that in the 24-hour, 10-second news cycle or TikTok, Twitter's news cycle that we have today. It's important that I talk about a couple of things that develop that, you know, these things were important and like pressing that I wanted to get to, like the day that I ended up having to get into all this. And I really want to make some points there. Well, actually, one last thing I wanted to say too, that I think is frustrating, just so people know out there, I don't think I've once since I've started doing this ever taken a vacation. Not that I even feel like I have to, since I don't work at a 9-to-5 job, but I think it's crazy that I've yet to take any kind of a vacation or break mentally. And yet I've more than once taken these breaks like this, where you guys don't know, at least I've told you after the fact, where I'm ultimately working my butt off behind the scenes and come right back to working here. So just recognize that. And then if hopefully in the future, I will take some time for myself. But, you know, this stuff is so important and everything is so pressing lately and kind of has been for a long time. It definitely seems like it's important to me. And I hope it's important to you that we care about all this stuff, and that I think personal time for vacation, unless it's like needed for mental health, is something that can be put off indefinitely. And if this stuff like this is indeed happening. So let's get into the main focus of today. And this is the opening point. And this is in regard to the IDF whistleblower. And this is damning. And by the way, just so you know, I had the mic was sort of held right there while I was opening. I just moved it, so let me know if the sound is okay. We're kind of just by our shoe strap, or what's that expression? By your bootstraps, or, you know, shoestring, whatever. We're kind of throwing it together today. It's important to me that we get this going and I get back to, you know, to work. Because that's got more than anything, guys, it is painful for me to not be in this and try. And because if I don't look at what's going on, it's very frustrating to me because I feel like I'm not aware. And yet if I do, it's even more frustrating because I'm not able to jump on and talk about it. So I just, shoestring budget. Well, something like that. Either way, the point was, we're going to get this going very soon. So make sure for those new that any weirdness or audio things or anything like that, this is just temporary flux. Now, this story, this first I saw shared by Asaf MD, the new interview with an anonymous IDF soldier. Now, this is put out by British mainstream media. So take that for what you will. It doesn't mean we should ever be blindly trusting any media, corporate or independent or otherwise. But the information here is backed by a lot of source material. It's backed by a lot of people in regard to, let's put it this way, that in any historical context, even though we always should have recognized that whether people are trustworthy or not, whatever that means to you, we should have always been questioning it. In classic context, the corporate media, or like we've said, human rights groups and the UN are the groups that we were usually told to look to. It's interesting to me today, at the very least, that point alone, that now we have corporate media standing up and highlighting very powerful things like this, where you have an IDF soldier who they claim is an IDF soldier, they've confirmed, and taken great lengths to make sure you can't identify him for the very reason I don't even think needs to be explained. That if anybody in Israel, and I'm talking even average people, recognized who he was, that he lived, he would probably be attacked for that. Now, that's not hyperbole. We see this happening right now, and we'll even get into some points about this in regard to the West Bank, or really anywhere right now. If you're not on the right side of the conversation of this kind of mad Zionist push, people are acting wildly irrational. And I think, quite frankly, it's because they recognize that people see through the lies, and they recognize that they're sort of a laughingstock in the world right now for how ridiculous the narratives have become. That's going to frustrate anybody, isn't it? It would drive me crazy if everybody was just laughing down my throat as I was trying to scream about how we're all, you know, think about how wild that is. I truly believe the Elon Levies of the world and the Eli David, I think they know they're lying. That's my opinion. But this, let's just put it this way. If they see this and just ignore it quite frankly, I doubt they'll even comment on it. But if they do, it'll be some dismissive idea or acting like it's not real without any due diligence. And that there tells you that they must be dishonest in some way to just disregard something like this, even though we can prove, and I mean outside of this conversation, before this, every single thing that he's talking about. Now, I'm going to play the breakdown that I cut. Every time there's a white flag, that's obviously where I made a cut, so it's very clear. The point is that I'll include the full video for you, which again is directly from Channel 4, which is British Public Broadcast Service. Make sure you watch it so you get every bit of context that you might think was left out or so on. But I believe it's very clear because all I did was cut out the commentary. What you're getting is just everything he said on the record, which I think is the important part of this. But you'll get in the full video, you get the interviewer adding context, adding things about like in his the way he sees it, or adding videos to actually back up what the guy is saying. But even then, my point is I just want you to hear what he says and what he believes. All the rest of what they show you've seen. I've already played all the videos of the woman walking with the child waving white flag getting shot by Israel, right? These things are provable information. So that's all there. So consider all of what we've gone over with what you're about to hear. Now, I'm going to try not to stop it, but I believe I will more than a couple of times just to make a couple of points here.
What stuff would they say?
There are no uninvolved, only unarmed.
Israel's war in Gaza has been one of the deadliest and most destructive in modern times. Its army insists it's only targeting Hamas, but it's accused of exacting a brutal collective punishment on the entire population.
Do you think that you witnessed war crimes taking place?
Probably. The ground assumption is that they are Hamas. And then if you go this way, you're bound to kill people that are not.
Now, in a rare interview, one soldier tells us about the reality he says he witnessed.
This is something that I'm going to carry for the rest of my life. There are literally people going around in Israel killing innocent civilians, right, all around. And this is something that needs to be stopped, and I'm needed partly to do that as well, especially in the first couple of weeks. It felt right, so yeah, it just made sense in a way that it didn't before.
Israel's response in Gaza came soon. First, a massive and deadly campaign of aerial bombardment.
At what stage did you start to have concerns about how the war was being fought?
I was serving in a commanding unit of a battalion that was fighting in Gaza.
And I should add, by the way, that it will show it once or twice underneath. But they make it very clear. Not only did they anonymize like the shadow, they've had an actor even read for him. So that's not even his actual voice. And so it's just important to think about how wild that is. In most cases, you just, you know, they kind of fog it out. And I think it's really interesting that this is clear, that it shows that they know there will be repercussions, even though he's speaking out about things that they're all aware of. I just think that's important.
A couple of weeks, No one went in. There it is right there. So we were just sitting on our asses, essentially looking in screens, essentially the drones going above Gaza. You just go through those channels and you look for those buildings just falling. It feels like Netflix. It feels like a video game for the first couple of days. But there is a moment you realize it's a freaking actual house. It just got completely destroyed. And I don't know, but there probably were some people in there. Maybe there are terrorists, maybe there are not, or Hamas, whatever. But you don't know. And then you start asking yourself, are all of those strikes, airstrikes, necessary? Or are we just having a light hand on the trigger here? And then it starts, and once it starts, it never stops.
What's the mood like of other people around you?
A lot of people are happy to see that we are, you know, we are paying back. That's like the Israeli retaliation.
And was that because they were convinced that they were hitting Hamas fighters, you think, or it went beyond that?
A lot of them don't draw the line between what we call militants or terrorists and what we would call civilians. After the 7th, for example, people saw those videos of those people being paraded through the streets around Gaza, right? And those people cheer or even take part in whatever it is. So they say, like, all of them are part of it. Like, they all support it.
Now, here's an important point that needs to be made. Let's just say for the benefit, or let's just say for sake of conversation, that you believe everything let's just say every Palestinian in general was cheering and supported and was happy that there were Israelis that were hurt. That's not the truth, but let's just say that for sake of conversation that that's what happened. It does not change the legal reality that you don't just get to arbitrarily decide that they're guilty because we saw X, Y, and Z. Even if it was literally everybody, that's still, you're still a civilian. You still have a right to your opinion. And here's an even more important point. If you're pretending to be the good guy, this is what it means to be the good guy. If you're pretending to be the rules-based international order, that's what it means to play the higher, or to take the higher ground, to not end up pretending that, well, they use cluster bombs, so we should too, because freedom, democracy. All it does, just like using anti-Semitism, the claim of to attack anybody calling out Israel's crimes, it waters down the reality of the meaning of all of that, right? So anti-Semitism, most people, has no meaning anymore because the very people who were always calling victim, and I'm talking about the Zionists here, use it to hide genuine concerns from average people about what Israel's doing. That what it does, it actually makes it, the real anti-Semitism gets buried. They make it more threatening. And we, the same kind of point. Right, so that's very important to realize, that he's telling you that they just decided that they're, and you have to realize that's why I put institutional title. This is not some individual choice. This is being allowed at a institutional level. Otherwise, this would not be so rampant, and what he tells you in here would not be so public. Like, I don't mean that we've heard this before, but I mean in the sense that they're doing it in front of other people. It's open. It's being discussed in other circles. This is an institutionally allowed thing. Now, that doesn't have to mean that they came out and said you're allowed to kill children, which we'll get into in a second, but it means that they look the other way at the very least. That is a criminal, guys. That is a criminal, authoritarian, genocidal government. And any other government that is allowing that or turning their heads in the same way is right there with them. And we'll get to that too.
Was that quite a widespread view that everyone in Gaza is complicit?
Very much so. For many of the people around me, that was the thing. It came from saying, you know, those are the kids that we spared in the war in 2014, right? Those are the kids that we spared then are now the terrorists that did the 7th, right?
Which there's no way you could know that. That's, I guarantee, is some kind of a propaganda push. Certainly some of them. But let's also realize those kids had their families killed, had their parents shot in front of them, had all sorts of much darker things happen that we've talked about. That doesn't justify them committing crimes in return, but it would justify legal resistance against a criminal army or an occupying power, right? So this is where we get into the nuance of what that means in the context of October 7th, and we've gone over that 45 times. The bottom line is that this is illegal, even if you think that they support other crimes. Supporting somebody committing a crime is not a crime itself. Just going, I think that's okay, is not a crime. That's your opinion. That is free speech. The bottom line here is that all they're doing is just casting a wide net over every single person in Palestine, Gaza, West Bank too, which we'll also get to, just so they can dehumanize them and act like every single one of them are criminals, terrorists, so nothing matters. And we're watching it play out with your government support.
The implication there being, if you kill a kid now, it's okay.
Everyone, yeah. That was, I don't want to say the majority, but it was alarmingly widespread in the people around me talking about this. No one is betting, right?
Make sure we play that part again.
Those are the kids that we...
is complicit.
Very much so. For many of the people around me, that was the thing. It came from saying, you know, those are the kids that we spared in the war in 2014, right? Those are the kids that we spared then are now the terrorists that did the 7th, right?
It's a bit the implication there being, if you kill a kid now, it's okay.
Everyone, yeah. That was, I don't want to say the majority, but it was alarmingly widespread in the people around me talking about this. No one is batting an eye. No one is questioning.
That's my point.
It's like, it's a given that if someone is in this area that we are in because everyone was supposed to be evacuated, if someone is there, they are Hamas.
And that's the point we've made many times. And I did include this one. This is the video of the woman with her child being shot, is that it's very, very clear that they have just laid out. And by the way, there's been Israeli articles about this from corporate Israeli media saying they've just made, I actually should have brought that up. I don't want to try to take time to grab it because I don't remember the full title, but the idea being that they've created zones, and anybody who wanders into that zone is called Hamas and killed. And they're not public air. They don't tell people what those zones are. It's just like the nautical miles of the ocean where they arbitrarily change how far they can fish every however so many times, you know, and they just kill people that cross it without even knowing that it's changed. There's no warnings. They just kill people. This is what's happening. There's no way around that. That's a crime. Your governments out there are absolutely okay with that.
Multiple occasions, fleeing Palestinian civilians have been filmed being shot, apparently by Israeli soldiers. Here, a grandmother is gunned down next to a child waving a white flag. The army says it's examining the incident. Three Israeli hostages have also been mistakenly shot dead by troops.
Were there times when subsequently it became clear that they were civilians, or weren't armed at least?
There was a guy holding something white or having a white t-shirt that was like, what's going on the radio? And he was approaching one of the places where one of the units was. And then the soldiers starts yelling, like in Arabic, like, stop, stop, or I will shoot you. And then the person starts running away. And then he shoot them and kill them. And then you ask yourself, like, did we just kill someone who was just, you know, was just trapped in the situation?
Were other soldiers around you, were they worried by what happened? Troubled by it?
Not really. I don't remember anyone talking about that. I think...
So this is the example we've seen over and over, and this goes well back before October 7th. That's also an important point to realize. Just the argument that they're outraged by what happened on October 7th, and they're not even getting into the funding of Hamas by Israel and the conversation about foreknowledge and allowance and all the stuff we talked about, Hannibal directive and mowing the grass and all the things that we know. This goes back long before that. The reality that months, if I remember correctly, before October 7th, there was that pretty viral video of a guy walking down some kind of a hallway or like a enclosure, and kind of looking back at them going, you know, holding his hands up and everything, just, and then a guy turns around and walks like another 10 feet. And they just shoot him twice in the back. Most of you probably remember that. Very little happened. As far as I understand it, the guy was reprimanded as usual with the big ones. They kind of pretend to fire him and blah, blah, blah. And you look back a year later and he's right back in the IDF and he's got a medal for something that he did, right? It's a constant. This is not something this is an institutional problem, and it's not Jews, it's not Israelis, it is Zionism. That's my opinion. Oh, on that note, by the way, just speaking about the exact context, because there's people that would disagree with me on the focal point in the background, I think it's important for you to fully understand that other perspective. One of the things that I was really frustrated about I couldn't get out was I think a really great interview with Adam Green, which is going to be contentious, I guarantee it, but I think it's important to understand some of this deeper research that he's done. That will be probably coming out tomorrow. that my plan was to kind of fill that in throughout the days I wasn't working, but I got so buried with everything, I wasn't able to do it. But it's a great interview, and you guys are going to enjoy it, I think. It's because it's, you know, even within it, we disagree on things, but that's the important part about these kind of conversations, that we're able to have an amicable disagreement, a discussion, and maybe come to something new between us, right? But either way, that will be coming out soon. That point there was just to make that clear about, you know, his argument would be that this is bigger than that, and really that ultimately you can even go back to that, you know, the back and forth between Zionism or other groups that have been before that, and even arguably Jewish organizations. That's where it becomes very contentious for some people. I still argue that from what I can see, and, you know, again, as I've said before, his research is much longer than mine, much deeper. But did I believe that Zionism is the true leading problem behind this? And at the very least, it's obvious that there are Jewish people. You can see them protesting right now with Palestinians or people that are fighting for Palestine that do not believe all of this, do not believe Zionism represents Judaism. So I think that's really important. But I could be wrong in the history, right? So we'll get to that tomorrow. But going back to the clip.
The thing here is they need to prove that they are not the enemy. The ground assumption is that they are Hamas. And then if you go this way, you are bound to kill people that are not, right?
He's saying that if you do what they're doing, you're bound to kill civilians. They know that. That's an accepted reality, and they do it anyway. That is not in any way, shape, or form taking every precaution to avoid civilian casualties, which is what we hear ad nauseum from every single person involved. I mean, quite frankly, even the people acting like this is genocide are still somehow pretending, I mean, like in the context of the government, still acting like maybe not genocide, but acting like we know that they should be doing this or that. But then all like State Department, White House, erring on the side of, well, we've spoken to our counterparts and they promised they're doing everything they can. We just get the same old repetition.
Israeli soldiers have been documenting the war in Gaza themselves on TikTok and Instagram. Some videos show soldiers trashing Palestinian homes.
How is that not enough, guys?
Others celebrate or mock the massive level of destruction.
Was that a common attitude?
For sure, like celebrating destruction, and many people are just like very happy about that. They feel like this is the payback. We show them what we can do, and now they will be afraid of us and not do it again. It's ridiculous. We also had at some point people start kind of a tourism kind of thing, going in to see the destruction, to take photos of it, to also take photos of yourself with, you know, with the gear, you know, feel like this big soldier that, you know, was part of this fight.
So did it feel like decisions were being made that were proportionate or not?
No, I think some decisions were not proportionate. Some decisions had also this ulterior motive in them of making this extra destruction, making this extra message for the people there.
Even soldiers with mainstream political backgrounds expressed views Jake found shocking. And some of those serving are followers of small but influential extremist parties in the government. They've been behind the most radical rhetoric, including calls to rebuild Israeli settlements inside Gaza.
Were there many soldiers serving around you who were supporters of extremist politicians? Ben Gavir, Smotrich, figures like that.
There are, and sometimes also in a quiet higher-up positions. There are people who live in the West Bank, or people that used to live in Gaza and Gush Katif, right? And when you hear them speak, that is chilling. When they talk about Palestinians, when they talk about the solution that they see to this conflict, those things are really, really scary.
What kind of stuff would they say?
There are no uninvolved, only unarmed.
That was a common phrase?
Not a common phrase. I heard it from a few people. It became like common in specific circles.
Do you feel responsible yourself then?
Yeah, this is something that I'm going to carry the rest of my life, obviously. And the way I look at it, my way of redeeming myself is to do anything I can to make justice and peace in this area.
You're quite emotional.
It's a shitty situation, right? When I was there, I was doing it. Now it's just being done in my name. It's horrible. And it's very frustrating and despairing knowing this is where we're going, right? Because you have to look at the 7th, right? Which was also a horrendous event. And essentially what it feels like our government and their government, Hamas, right? They are actually on the same team that essentially want to see this piece of land just being soaked with blood.
I mean, it's just so much to be the conversation from an IDF member recognizing the problem, acknowledging the overlap from Hamas and Israel itself. I mean, this is what we need to recognize. For those that may be new to this conversation, the overwhelming reality that it's what we're being told, the forceful narratives from Israel, from the United States, from all these leadership positions, more rulership, it's not the reality on the ground. Now, that again, it's important to point out, which they go over in this interview, that the majority of individuals, civilians, military, police, settlers, absolutely do want to continue what's happening in Gaza. Not all of them, that's important, but clearly the majority. But that's there's a deviation between whether they support what's open, in regard to the hostages and the people they want back. And there's a lot of different overlap there. It's really fascinating. Here's the link, by the way, that I was talking about. Israel created kill zones in Gaza. Anyone who crosses into them is shot. I mean, Haaretz. This is the way back, the archive, so you can check it out for yourself. It's pretty obvious. This is how much information is out there. But yet they stand up and they lie, and the fake media promotes those lies or doesn't push back in the right ways, and we just stumble forward. Even as everybody, including people even on the ground, recognize this. By the way, I thought it was interesting that as I was posting this, and oh, I think Rumble just went live. I was trying to get it going in the background. Yeah, it does look like it's live now, but I'm probably going to delete it afterward and repost it because it's not, you know, the full video. But nonetheless, it's there for those if you want to check it out. But I thought it was interesting that as I was posting this to start, I shared this on Truth Social. And what was interesting to me is that it auto-filled Gaza to level Gaza. I just thought that was interesting. Just kind of showing you an interesting partisan, the fact that anybody would think it was acceptable to just let, like, as from a U.S. perspective, I just find that interesting. And more so that platform would sort of like auto-fill that for you. I just think that's interesting. Because realize it filled it. How would you even say that before it, right? It was hashtag Gaza and it became level Gaza. I thought that was quite interesting, but not surprising, right? But going forward, remember, here's the full video if you'd like to check it out for yourselves. I wanted to make sure we pointed out, and I'm glad I wanted to start with that. But I also wanted, before we get into other topics, start with some things that I just think it's worth making sure you didn't miss that aren't new, that we talked about last week, but just in case, in a little quick compilation of things that are important right now, sort of like Haaretz saying what can't be said. Israel has been defeated, a total defeat. You all have seen this, but let's just recognize how wild that is, that mainstream corporate Israeli media is like, yep, Israel's lost. IDF members are going, yeah, we're committing war crimes. Nobody cares. Everybody sees this, and yet it just keeps zombie walking forward. I mean, what that really shows you more than anything is that we don't have any influence over our government's actions. They love to pretend that. And we could totally segue that into an entire election conversation as we roll into the next selection season, but we'll save that for another time. The point is that we were just talking about that, how important it is to realize that we don't affect the outcome, not right now. I know that's really hard for a lot of people to recognize, but I think it's shockingly obvious. The point is we should want that. It's paramount for a representative government if we really had one. The reality is that we don't. I know that's shocking for some people, but we'll get there more as we come to the election. We should be fighting to change it, not just pretending like it works so we can pat ourselves in the head for doing our civic duty every 4 years. The bottom line is if we can't have any influence over the action, even when the vast majority of left and right or people that see through the illusion can recognize what's happening and yet it just keeps going, Biden or Trump, we need to see what that really shows us. On top of that, another thing we should make sure we recognize is, yeah, they're committing a genocide. I mean, it's shockingly obvious, like all the rest of it, that the World Court has clearly said it has merit, despite their watering this down after the fact, and they're still going through their investigation. The United Nations standing up, and specifically Francesca Albanese standing up, and I would still love to speak to her, by the way. I kind of doubt it will happen, because I'm, especially with the higher circles, I'm sure we're perceived as some kind of conspiracy outlet, but nonetheless, I'm hoping I can connect with her because I find her to be credible. And I think that she's taken a very courageous stance in all of this. And she has now found reasonable ground that genocide is being committed in Gaza. And it is a scathing report. Make sure you check it out. I think I've already retweeted this. No, I guess I didn't. I'll include that, actually. And interestingly enough, and this is the kind of point I was making before, Elizabeth Warren says she believes Israel's war in Gaza will legally be considered a genocide. Yeah, really brave to come out swinging after 6 months of genocide, right? But whatever, I'll take the note that people can see, and maybe that will give the average person some reason to believe this more. But I never believe that this is because that she thinks that this is because she recognizes, I know I'm jaded, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. She recognizes a political benefit in acknowledging the obvious thing that 90% of the world sees. And, you know, I think that's what it becomes, that you have fair weather politicians, right? That just, they're opportunists. They go, okay, I'm going to take advantage of this because it'll win. I'll lose some points with Israel and maybe I'll lose an election, but maybe it'll come out way ahead because all of the people will support me. Who knows? I don't believe they mean it, but either way, what she says is correct. It is a genocide. And she's finally having she's finally seeing an opportunity and saying the same. Now, ICC can no longer ignore the genocide in Gaza, Al Jazeera writes, and the idea is just simply how obvious this is. And this isn't the ICJ, right? That's the World Court, the Court of Justice. She's talking about the International Criminal Court, which both of which I argue are wildly compromised. Doesn't mean they always, as we just saw with Israel, fall into that, but it's obvious that their influence, at the very least, is becoming so damn obvious that I think that's the point here, that they just can't ignore this anymore. Here's a great clip from Bill Maher, always had the most absurd stance on a lot of this stuff. And here is Glenn Greenwald just destroying him. By the way, this is what it looks like to just say the most obvious, provable evidence, completely backed by evidence statements in a context where they're not used to stuff like that. And it's just so incredible to watch. I mean, they're almost speechless. You can't dispute what he's saying. People will say he's wrong, he's lying, he's a racist, anti-Semite. He's not. At least not that I can tell. The bottom line is what he says here is it should be common knowledge.
Our fault what came out. We didn't go into Egypt.
Well, we did.
We wound up with the Muslim Brotherhood.
We didn't go into Egypt. We were supporting and propping up Mubarak for 30 years, even as we were cheering for all the Tahrir Square demonstrators as though we were on their side. It was
so just really quickly, like right there. Like, how is that not common knowledge? How is Bill? My point is, I think Bill Maher either doesn't know that, which is embarrassing, or is actively covering up a reality for a very clear objective, partisan or otherwise. But that's common knowledge, is it not? We should know these things. It's not, this is not, you know, The Intercept is a group that is, you know, independent, I guess, but I don't know. There's lots of concerns about connections. I guess there's even a difference between Greenwald himself and the platform. And my point nonetheless is Greenwald's research is based on things that we can prove. And the reality being that the U.S. government is 100% involved. So is Israel with Egypt. And even going, the conversation, I think, for at least with TLAV, became more focused on with the regime change and Sisi going into power, and it's my favorite dictator, but it's obvious, isn't it? But yet these things are regarded as somehow, I don't even know how to frame it, like uncommon information or things that aren't proven. It just shows you how controlled and how completely lost most people are within the corporate conversation. And those are the people that circle around the shows and sit in those chairs pretty often. I bet you that's why you rarely see people like him on certain things like this.
Egypt.
Well, we
wound up with the Muslim Brotherhood.
We didn't go into Egypt. We were supporting and propping up Mubarak for 30 years, even as we were cheering for all the Tahrir Square demonstrators as though we were on their side. It was
Liars.
Our government that kept Mubarak in power, just like we've done across the entire Muslim world.
And
it's amazing for you to say that, well, look at all these Muslims. The minute you give them a little bit of freedom, they go wild and they start being all violent. How can you be a citizen of the United States,
my God,
the country that has generated more violence and militarism in the world over the last 5 or 6 decades, and say, look at those people over there. They are incredibly violent. We play a significant role in what has been happening in the Middle East because we've been interfering and dominating that region in order to have access to their oil.
I wasn't talking
Israel,
about violence.
So
I was talking about theocracy. That doesn't happen here.
No, that doesn't happen here, but at the same time, Iran isn't invading lots of other countries and occupying them for a decade, nor are fundamentalist Muslim countries the way the United States is. So,
also, I find, now, to be very clear, and I've made this point before, and I should have fleshed this out to be very specific, Israel is not technically a theocracy. There's not an overlap in regard to what, at least as we're, see, this is where it's interesting. The argument is that when you have a religious aspect of your government that actually through your religious doctrine is acting within the government. That's the point. But is that not exactly what the Zionist religious Zionism party, which is part of the government, is? I mean, they're absolutely acting with religious doctrine in mind. So how is that any different? It's just not publicly stated that way. So my point is, it's embarrassingly stupid for Israel and all their supporters to go, we're on in the theocracy, even as Robert highlights regularly that through their democracy, limited or otherwise, whatever you think it is, it truly is, we could prove a representative aspect where people can vote and change and things have changed. Now you get arguments about how it's some Stone Age Muslim country. People are so wildly ignorant about Iran. It's a very technologically advanced country. It's very, I mean, just looking at the way they engage in foreign policy. In any case, the point is, there's plenty I disagree with just about any government in the world, especially Iran. But the ignorance around not understanding this or choosing to be willfully ignorant around it just blows my mind. And the point, coming back to the point, is that it's not a theocracy. We don't have that here. Well, we're wildly supporting that in Israel, in Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's just embarrassing that we don't talk about that, or it's willful ignorance. I mean, these are the kind of conversations we should be having on real stages, on presidential debates. But nope, we get the fluffy nonsense questions and wedge issues because we're all being lied to. Okay, I'm done preaching.
These things are interlinked. Talking about theocracy, that doesn't happen here.
No, well, and, okay, that doesn't happen here, but at the same time, Iran isn't invading lots of other countries and occupying them for a decade, nor are fundamentalist Muslim countries the way the United States is. So these things are interlinked because we are continuously interfering in that part of the world. Uh-huh. And so to say,
really, it's all our fault.
It's not all our fault, but when you send your military for six straight decades into other countries to bomb them, yeah, kill their children and women and innocent men, prop up dictators, you take responsibility for your actions and say, to the extent that that region...
That religion goes back 1,000 years before our revolution. So
let's just kind of lump in every single different... I mean, think about how ignorant it is to lump in, like, is every single Christian nation exactly the same, or even regard, let's just say, majority Christian countries? No, there's shocking difference between countries, the United States and plenty of other, like, to just ignorantly pretend like any kind of country that's related to this religion is all the same. Guys, this is ignorance. It's stupidity, or it is propaganda. Doesn't mean he's wrong. In some cases, there are places I would argue that there's problems because, but bottom line is to sweep it all in. Broad stroking is ignorant. Period.
I don't think we can take all the blame.
I don't think we should. I think we should take a lot of it. And there's lots of bodies and corpses that have been piled up in the name of Christianity and Judaism as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Not recently.
Have you heard of the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza for the last 50 years, motivated in part by extremist views of Judaism, or the wars in Europe, or the fact that there were generals in the United States saying we have to go and invade and destroy Iraq, a country of 26 million people, because our God is bigger? Lots of religions, not just Islam, produce violence.
If I could just make one quick point about Egypt.
That silly liberal view that all religions are alike. Because it makes you feel good.
No, it makes you feel good to say our side is better. Those people over there are
primitive
and violent.
No, it makes you feel good to put a crown on your head and say, I'm a good person. How do I prove that?
You get to ignore the responsibility that your own government has for the violence and instability in the world by saying, look, it's that primitive religion over there that's to blame.
All right.
I mean, he just got crushed in every possible way right there. And think about ignoring, 500,000 children were killed in this war. Do you think that was worth it? Yes, we think it's worth it. But we don't talk about those things because freedom and democracy, that's what we were doing when we murdered 500,000 children in Iraq, but it's worth it, right? Like, to just sweep that away, only not in the last 1,000 years. What about what's going on right now in Gaza? I mean, it's just so shocking these kind of people are even given any kind. I mean, I'll leave it there. The point is, it's obvious that this is willful ignorance. I'm not going to, let's not pretend like someone like Bill Maher is unaware of the dynamic. Now, here's another clip. This is from Badar Al-Amri. Now, this guy's Neve Gordon, professor of international law and human rights, speaking with Democracy Now. I thought this was also important for him to break down the background, the history, and realize that this is not new. I mean, I don't know. Most of the audience here, I'm willing to bet, is aware of this, but this is still an important thing to have on the record, and especially for those that don't know this.
Seeing destruction, and we're seeing massive displacement in an area that's already food insecure, And then we're seeing Israel obstructing aid from entering Gaza. So on average, in the past 6 months, 112 trucks have been entering per day, while before October 7th, 500 trucks were entering each day. We're seeing consistent attacks on aid workers, as you mentioned in the previous item, with on average one aid worker being killed every day. And we're seeing the destruction of one third of the agricultural land in the Gaza Strip, 20% of the greenhouses, and 70% of the fishing vessels in the Gaza Strip. So no internal food can be produced in the Gaza Strip. And as you mentioned earlier, what we're witnessing and what Reem and Khulod have just expressed is the most horrific situation a parent can experience, is their children dying in front of them of famine. Now, what we wrote, Muna Haddad and me, is about the history of using food as a weapon in the Gaza Strip. So if in 1967 Israel occupies the Gaza Strip, its approach is very different in the beginning. It surveys the Gaza Strip, it counts the agricultural land, it looks what the Palestinians are planting. And in the beginning, what it does is it actually plants trees and provides the Palestinians with better varieties of seeds. And it monitors the food basket of the Palestinians. And in its reports, it tells us that there's the food basket in 1966 was 2,400 calories per person. And after 4 years of occupation, it's now 2,700, basically boasting about the improvement in the food basket. But what we see already then is that that Israel's controlling the Palestinian food basket. And in the beginning, it wants to kind of increase the productive energies of the Palestinians so they can work in Israel as cheap laborers and extract their labor for Israel's use. Everything begins to change in the first Palestinian Intifada in December 1987, where Israel begins imposing restrictions on the Gaza Strip, first by creating magnetic cards that monitor the entrance of laborers into Israel and restricts the entrance of laborers to Israel.
Now, we're going to point something out about this in a second in regard to the sort of surveillance state of just Gaza from Israel and how this stuff is the same conversation, the whole battle-tested weapons conversation. Where do you think this is stemming from? The conversation Whitney and I just had, her work in regard to Unit 8200 and these intelligence overlap companies like Carbine 911 and the smart wall conversation, all these things that are being supported by people that 30 seconds ago were screaming about the Great Reset, but now because they're blinded by their support for Israel are ushering in the same technocratic surveillance state. Where do you think this is stemming from? Right? This is what he's talking about. And U.S. is a willing partner in the surveillance state, the technocratic version of this panopticon being built around us. It's all part of the same conversation.
It also, a few years later, creates a fence and fences the Gaza Strip so that and creates only four or five crossings. And later on, with the Second Intifada, we see a total reversal of the approach after 1967. We see Israel destroying agricultural land. We see it creating a buffer zone around the fence so that Palestinians, farmers cannot get near the fence. We see it destroying fishing vessels. And we see it limiting further the Palestinian food basket. Then comes 2005, Israel unilateral withdrawal from the Gaza Strip, the movement of its soldiers to the fence, but the beginning use of the drones over the Gaza skies. And after Hamas wins in democratic elections in the Gaza Strip, we see the implementation of a blockade, where Israel basically blocks the Gaza Strip and does monitors very carefully what enters and what exits. It further destroys more agricultural land, and then it creates the Ministry of Defense with the Ministry of Health, creates lists of items that can enter the Gaza Strip and items that cannot enter. So flour and baby formula can enter, but chocolate and certain kinds of pastas cannot enter.
Except those things have also been restricted because it changes constantly. And we've already shown you this. I forget which corporate outlet covered this. It was corporate media. I think it was CNN covered the list that was changing day by day. So how in the world are these trucks supposed to know what is and is not allowed? And they're arbitrary things like gauze. And one of them was baby formula, at least when we were covering this. But his point is it's completely chocolate and random things that have no meaning in regard to Hamas supporting or whatever else. They're just trying to, one, restrict the food access, which is obviously happening, but also just create a situation where they don't have anything they need at all. But the point about it shifting constantly is so the trucks are coming in with benign things like chocolate, but get turned around just for having that. This is all by design. And it's shocking that people, if there's anybody out there that exists in that category, can't actually see it.
And Israel begins to monitor the calorie intake of the population and creates what's called, it called a humanitarian minimum. We will allow, Israel says, a humanitarian minimum to enter the Gaza Strip, leaving the population regularly in a situation of food insecurity and controlling and managing the population through food insecurity. And every time there's a cycle of violence, and there's been five major cycle of violence since 2008 until today, Israel closes off all the borders, and what had been a food insecurity before the cycle of violence drops dramatically, and we see incidents of malnutrition and so forth. And so this is kind of the background of what we've been seeing. And when this war begins, so we see that everything you've been describing earlier is intentional, because Israel has been controlling the food basket and using it as a weapon since the beginning of the occupation until today.
Exactly. And this isn't just like everything else we're talking about, and shockingly easy to prove. And by the way, here is this in January 2024. What he was talking about was before October 7th, that they made this conversation, because you can look this up well back then, where they discussed the minimum, right? We're not going to help them. We're only going to make sure they get just what they need to survive. Well, that's torture right there. That's collective punishment. It always has been. But here's the point is after October 7th, they made this statement again. We're allowing minimum amount of aid necessary in order to prevent a humanitarian crisis. Well, there's clearly a crisis, so that's not even happening. But even that alone is a provable war crime. And all of these governments just don't care. That's the disgusting reality of all of this. Now, on top of that, oh, and I did want to point this out really quickly. This one. Just because I saw some comments in the chat that, you know, interestingly enough, by the way, that, you know, people that are supporting pretty much everything we're saying, but also folding into this that there's somehow a focus on only Jewish people, which I strongly disagree with. And quite frankly, think that it's disgusting that somebody would make statements only about Jewish people. That's disgusting, period. But here's an important point to make, and I'll come back to this later. By the way, I have to be honest, it actually physically pains me to even agree momentarily with Mehdi Hasan, because I don't find him to be credible, and I find him to be ridiculous in a lot of the conversations. But as always, I've pointed out, statements, true statements are true regardless of what kind of ridiculous person makes them, right? So the point is, he says, let's be clear. If you are attacking or abusing Jews for being Jews, for their clothing, language, customs, or ethnicity, you're an awful person. I 100% agree with that. And he says, you're a bigot, an anti-Semite. Well, getting into the meaning of what a Semite is, that aside, you, and he says, you are no, this is the important part, and you are no friend of Palestine or the Palestinians. Guys, 100% agree with that. Here's what's funny about it. Elon says, if you're calling, Elon Levy says, if you are calling to dissolve the nation state that the vast majority of the world do believe, that is the ultimate guarantor of their security in a hostile world, exposing them to mortal and existential peril, you fall into the same category. Don't you love that? Here's a person coming out to aggressively say, if you attack Jews in any way, you're a disgusting person. Elon goes, that's not enough. This is the point they keep making. about how there are people that are so aggressively on the side of Israel, like Trump and Biden, who will just barely step out of line and be like, maybe don't kill as many children, but we support you and here's all the weapons. You're a raging anti-Semite and you're disgusting and we know you don't like Jew. They'll go after the people that still support them for barely stepping out of line. I think that's so shocking. It's something I think is important to the bigger conversation. That's what he's doing right here. But what's interesting about it is he's saying, making it clear, you fall into that category, even though you're saying the bottom line on top of that, though, is what are they calling for? Well, I'm not sure what Mehdi's actual stance on this is, but people that are just saying Israel shouldn't exist. You could argue they may have that opinion, but you can't argue that that's like saying free Palestine means you hate Jews. It's an ignorant, lazy effort to try to conflate people that you know are only calling out the state of Israel, which is not the state of the Jews. And what's funny to me, he even actually makes this point where they used to just say it is no matter what for everybody. But he says the vast majority of the world's Jews. That's interesting to me. So I disagree with that, actually. I think that there's a growing movement of people that are recognizing the lie of Zionism through the state of Israel. But even that shows you that, okay, well, there's an entire group of Jews in the world that do not think that. So you can't just keep conflating this. So are you saying they're not Jewish then because they don't think that? That's pretty much what everybody says in the Zionist camp. In any case, the point is that's important for this conversation. We are not acting like every Jewish person is part of the problem because, guys, that is just disgusting. That's like saying any white person, any black person, any Christian, it's dumb. We must realize that, okay? Now, the other part, ultimate guarantor of their security in a hostile world. Well, I just kind of addressed that, but the obvious reality is that that's not the truth. The state of Israel and Zionism itself is the reason for a lot of obvious points that there is insecurity for Jewish people. And again, I'm not talking about the concept that they're highlighting. In fact, I don't think there is the problem that they're highlighting, not even remotely. I think there is racism that applies to any type of group. I think what we're seeing often is this overcompensation, this creation of an illusion. If we have time, we'll get to the campus conversation. Even I know that's just the hottest big news right now. Frankly, I think it's a small part of this story, but I will point it out if we get to it. But the reality being that there is still racism. There are people, as we can see, that clearly just don't like Jewish people, assuming that's not a Zionist bot in the chat that just does that to make us look a certain way, which does exist, and we all should know that. It's interesting to see that the very creation of the state of Israel and this push to make them feel like victims, so the reality is you need Israel, so you're safe. Well, are you pretending that right now in this world that Jews in the United States are at more danger than in Israel? Right now you're pretending you're in this mess? I mean, the Hamas group that you funded is involved with a war with you? How is that a safer location? And that's because of your actions and your funding and your bombing. So it's obvious that's not the truth. But I think that's part of why they're trying to create this frenzied push to make it seem like it's this overwhelming cloud of anti-Semitism overcoming the United States. I keep seeing that same phrasing going around. The reality is, we'll hopefully get to, and if we don't, this point is important, is that it's obvious to me that this is causing unity, that there are Jews and Muslims and Christians and everybody left and right marching through these colleges going, we want to stop a genocide. That makes their hair light a fire. They can't stand that because it's exactly the opposite of what they want the world to see. And I'm talking about anybody, Zionists, people like Biden and Trump that don't want you to see this because it works for larger agendas. All that to be saying that it's clear that this one tweet here seems to encapsulate so many important things. And I'm not going to go over it all again when we come back to it, but I will make a point about it when we come back to it in a minute. Now, back to this point, I wanted to highlight a couple of important things here, which is one, in case you didn't see this, as I said, we all told you this was happening. And this is in regard to the settlements in Gaza. You know, the very beginning, we told you this was the reality because they had meetings about it. They had money allotted for it. They had entire settler communities with Ben Gavir dancing next to him going, yay, Gaza settlements. They've already started to build some of them. And yet still, shockingly, on the corporate media, this is a blood libel conspiracy theory. It's embarrassing. But they don't even have that kind of feeling, I don't think, in the corporate media. But I said, we told you it was happening. Yet for some, these easily provable reality that was set in motion long before October 7th was drowned out by screams of anti-Semitism and shrieks of blood libel. As with many similar examples of the past, the claims turned out to be very true indeed. Here is Netanyahu, same point probably, telling you in a meeting where he's speaking in Hebrew, but ultimately that he's unveiling plans to construct settlements in Gaza, backed by a staggering investment of $5 billion U.S. dollars. Where do you think that's coming from? This is exactly the reality. And yet, even though, just like geoengineering, this will still get dismissed as fake news, even though he's literally telling you, well, we shouldn't have needed this. It was already clear. It's already happening. That's crazy. And so what they're going forward is clear, permanent, all-encompassing occupation, which, by the way, is already what's been going on. But now they're just making this policy while still denying that's the reality. Isn't that hilariously stupid? But the problem is, it's not funny because this is real. These are people's lives we're talking about. On top of that, showing you the broad strokes here, the all-encompassing kind of Google technocracy surveillance overlap. I'm telling you, this is bigger than just Gaza or the United States or Israel. This is a worldwide problem that is being driven by mostly these entities we're talking about. But again, I think this is a world. This, when we get into the Great Reset point, we have to have noticed that all of them were on the same page, guys. China, Russia, everyone seemed to be in the same direction. That can't be forgotten about. But Mohammed points out, his name is Mihaj Abbasi, I believe. Not familiar with the account, but he posted this. WhatsApp leaked, and this is a media report. And I believe this was, I forgot the actual platform. In any case, this is being reported pretty broadly. WhatsApp leaked Palestinians' information to the Israeli army. If a Palestinian family is at home, information is leaked to the Israeli army, and they target the house where the family lives. Now, this has already been discussed in 972 magazine articles. This has been discussed in multiple overlaps of the AI program. So this is a very obvious thing. This just highlights more so of the Western platform overlap, which, by the way, eerily overlaps and dovetails with all these UN 8200 surveillance companies and so on. The point is that they are working Google, WhatsApp, all these groups with helping them target civilians. Nobody seems to care. Now, let's show you a couple of these, by the way. So this is just a couple of examples of things that are, as we should know now, not pinpoint targeting, just general destruction of massive buildings. Just a normal day in Gaza, where they just take down an entire complex, which we now know are usually full of people, or they don't care. Either way. Here's another one. This one, residential area, Al-Daraj neighborhood. People standing everywhere, guys. I mean, how is that? There's no way around it. That's a crime. 100%. There's no effort to clear these people. And look, I shouldn't even need to keep bringing it up, but all the way back, and I think it was October 20th. Yeah, October 20th. Amnesty International, damning evidence of war crimes as Israeli attacks wipe out entire families in Gaza. And again, the same point was, it was only an investigation between the 7th when it started, you know, post October 7th, I'm talking about the genocide started, and October 12th. In just that time frame, they found 5 examples of them provably, of their own investigation, targeting civilians, not trying to remove them from the area, or just having no concern for them at all. 5 examples, October 20th, and it's gotten way worse since then, and it just keeps happening. Here is a very obvious example of a huge, I mean, there's a guy riding his bike right there. There's people walking by. As he says, Google's Project Nimbus is a $1.2 billion deal to Israel using artificial intelligence to target homes. We've talked about the Habsora, or the Gospels, what it translates to. That's the general kind of overlap. Then we have this specific human targeting AI, which is Lavender. These things are all public. And each example is showing you that they are not concerned about civilian deaths. The technology was used to target a home that just killed 2 adults and 18 children, according to Pelham. Google employees who were aware of the cloud technologies used by Israel in the genocide on Gaza have held protests trying to end the deal. And we just covered that last show. Just wanted to show you how this looks. Okay, this is what it looks. If anyone is pretending like this is one, pinpoint targeting Hamas, or 2, that you can somehow justify the bombing this close to civilians that are just casually, you know, riding their bike by, or on top of that, that we're supposed to pretend like this has any justifiable legal background, watch this bombing. Look at that. There are children right there. There's a woman standing right there. Guys, that is like multiple blocks. That is incredible. People died. Nobody cares. And Mohammed Safa points out, Israel has dropped, this as of April 23rd, Israel has dropped more than 75,000 bombs and shells on Gaza in 200 days, 20 times more than the U.S. aimed at Iraq in 6 years of war. How do stats like that miss people? There's no way you could pretend Iraq was much bigger. There was a much larger fighting force. How are we pretending with half these people being civilians and or rather children under 18 that this is any way making sense? We all know it doesn't. Here's another clip. Abir points out that when you, this person's discussing this, Eel Wiseman, when you grow up in Israel, the entire education system is priming you to become a part of the national project of erasure and dispossession.
You grow up in Israel, the entire education system is priming you to become part of a national project of erasure and dispossession. There are things that you simply are not told. You are lied to, and then you see the reality in front of you. You're told that, oh, you know, that bunch of ruins, when you drive out of Haifa towards the on the main coastal highway and you see those ruins, they say these are Byzantine ruins, and you go like, did the Byzantine have mosques? And who are those people that lived here, and where are they? And these kind of questions are not provided to you. And you understand that state ideology requires a certain narrative and requires certain epistemic erasure, meaning like erasure of history, erasure of people, erasure of the truth that you actually see in front of your eyes.
Dang it. I hate when I miss the TikTok symbol. I hate showing that. So here's an update from Sarah, and this is coming from Euromed Human Rights Monitor. As of the 24th, and I believe the date on this is actually, to the 23rd is that last update. They've killed now 15,780 Palestinian children, 15,000 children in Gaza in just 200 days. Now you take the math on that comparatively, whatever the right phrase would be, like compare it to Iraq. Compare it to the time frame, the size, the fighting force, the amount of children present, and you make sense of that and pretend like this is somehow justified. I mean, this is what I keep saying the whole time. How is it possible that there's some kind of a narrative? Now, look, there are people pretending like that's not even true, despite the fact that the UN and pretty much everybody with a brain and integrity has acknowledged that there is, at the very least, thousands of children have been killed. But it's obvious this number is even bigger than what we can see because of how many they can't find, that they're buried. The point is that let's just say it's 1,000 children. What narrative somehow makes that acceptable? It wasn't acceptable for 500,000 with Iraq. That still gets played to this day. That will haunt her memory for the rest of, and after she's now dead, but after forever. She will be remembered as the person that said that was okay because it wasn't okay. My point is 15,000 children, there's nothing you can go, oh, Hamas, human shields, that just suddenly goes, oh, okay, and that's why that makes sense. It doesn't. It's disgusting, and average people are looking at this, trying to find out how they can make sense of this. And they're the ones that start getting like emotionally, like outraged, making some TikTok video crying about how their whole world has been shattered because there's no way, because they're good people. They've just been lied to, and they're suddenly not willing to accept that. There's 79 children killed every day. 79 children every single day for 7 months almost. I mean, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever had to report in my life. 79 children a day. What does that break down to? That's 3 children. Is that right? Yeah. I believe that's 3 children every hour. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And there's a lot more stats in here, by the way. The same ones we've covered in the past. 137 journalists. You know what's shocking about this is that these numbers have almost fallen into the background because of how crazy that number is for children killed. But think about how unprecedented every single one of these are. 137 journalists in 7 months? It's shocking. How about, 131,000 homes completely destroyed? Obviously, that's because they're building things and paving them down and destroying. It's obvious. 445 schools damaged. 651 mosques. 905 health professionals. That's doctors, nurses, ambulance drivers killed. 322 health facilities. 203 civil defense workers. I mean, guys, these are shocking. But it doesn't matter. Oh, so 6.5? How did I do that math wrong on my phone? Okay, well, maybe I'm wrong. Sugar says 6.5 per hour. I did it really quick on my phone, but maybe I'm bad at math. I don't think so, but I typed it wrong. In any case, it's too many. I mean, one a day is too many. I mean, it's just unbelievable what people are ignoring. Now, I wanted to quickly just point out, because this overlaps with both, the idea that this is actually happening, despite even just what we just showed you alone, the Senate has now overwhelmingly passed a $95 billion foreign aid bill. Look, first of all, before I even finish the sentence, that should not be happening right now with what's going on in which, I mean, if, how about we should never be sending almost $100 billion for foreign wars when there's plenty of people in this country that need more help than funding wars overseas? Or we shouldn't do it anyway. Why in the world we're supporting the funding of foreign wars as if this somehow makes us more safe? Have we not learned from the ongoing war on terror? Well, we have. They just don't care. The point being that if you actually paid attention, it's that we have now more of the same problem they claim they've been fighting for 50 years, however long it's been going on. That's why Afghanistan is, Taliban is still there, right? Because they never intended to remove these groups. This is not the reality of what this was. All they did was continue the problem. How do you fight terror anyway? It's because it's not meant to be won. It's the same as the rest of their fake wars. So $95 billion going to foreign aid when there are people that we can't buy new pencils and textbooks for teachers. We can't. There are people that are starving in this country. Not to say that that should be the tax dollars. My point is always from a personal freedom perspective that it should not be the guaranteed responsibility of everybody else to take care of somebody else that's in need. But my argument would be if it wasn't forced on everybody, that there'd be enough people who actually understand charity that would be helping. Like, bottom line is it's amazing to me that we're spending money funding the Azov movement, Nazis and fascists, or funding other Nazis and fascists in Israel or any other discussion we're having, and we're not helping people in this country. That's your tax dollars they're using. Because this is the reality, as I've said many times, this government runs in the blood of other nations, guys. That's how this works. And that's my point about the election too. You go through the same cycle, guess what? You're going to get the same thing. That's going to happen for 4 more years. And I'll be here saying the same thing, and we'll do it again for 4 more years until we recognize that this is only going to continue. Do you think most Americans want this? It's provably not true. They do it anyway. And to finish the sentence, $95 billion in foreign aid, delivering billions of dollars in weapons and support to Ukraine and Israel, despite opposition from both parties to some degree. The point is that I know any Americans that truly want both of these at the least, but one. Some people definitely do. But my God. And on top of that, here's what I'm blanking on his name off the top of my head. Does it say his name? And I forget give me the name in the chat. I'm forgetting the White House staffer here. He says, just hours after, give me the name of him down there so I can make sure you guys have the name. But he's at the White House press briefing, and he's saying, the tweet is saying from Ben Swan, just hours after President Biden signed the $60.8 billion in foreign aid just for Ukraine, that part of it, the White House is now transferring the funds and weapons, quote, immediately to compensate for lost time. That's fantastic, right? Go through some government process that's going to help you get what you need. Probably take about 7 months, if not ever. But immediately sending weapons to Nazis because we need it now, because freedom. Yeah, thank you, Jake Sullivan. Just because, this is the same point I've made many times about how shockingly stupid it is to pretend you're fighting a war on white supremacy and then constantly funding the most obvious example of that, or both, in the world. This package includes, he says, urgently needed artillery and HIMARS ammunition and more armor vehicles, javelins, stingers, and air defense interceptors, other things. By the way, this is while Ukraine is currently hitting Russian refineries inside Russia, you know, because we're trying to create World War III, right? Allowing and arming the groups that are actively driving that. Like, think about how crazy that is. By the way, let's not forget the U.S. government, as per the U.K. Times, months ago, if not a year ago, reported that the U.S. government was flying in the Azov movement into Russian central areas to carry out assassinations and other operations. But yeah, we're only taking a support role while we give you everything you need, conduct your operations with you, completely propagandize it. Same thing's happening in Israel. Your government is part of all of this, if not the part of it all. The Cradle reports Biden pledges to approve billions of dollars in bombs for Israel. Totally, because everyone American wants that? No, not at all. Doesn't matter, though, because you don't have any say over what's happening. Truth is, They don't care about any of this. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing that. Now, let's talk about the mass grave conversation. Because while they're sending billions of dollars in funding to the group that allowed this to happen or made this happen, Americans see this. The world sees this. Now, I'm never going to pretend like the whole claim of a rules-based international order led by a bunch of authoritarian sociopaths was ever going to have some kind of a positive benefit. But the reality is that there are people out there that at least somewhat operate with an idea of integrity or rules or laws or whatever. And the point is that when you have the leading groups in the world, start in Russia, China, the United States, at least from the military perspective, acting with such open disregard for just morals, what do you think that's going to do? It's going to cause us to spin out. I mean, I made this point a long time ago, taking the phrase from Galloway, rampant lawlessness. What do you think this is causing? Our government is acting with rampant lawlessness. Well, it causes other Americans, like with the Level Gaza hashtag on Truth Social, to believe that it's okay to be rampantly lawless because we have an American flag, because we're strong, because our military is better than yours, because we're ignorant. Because we're trumped up to believe that somehow because we're strong, that everything we do is okay. It's sad. Uncovering of mass graves at Gaza's Nasir Hospital. And that's not the only one, by the way. What you need to know. The discovery of a mass grave inside the Nasir Medical Complex in Khan Yunis is in the southern Gaza Strip is what we're talking about in this article. It says more than 300 bodies have been uncovered so far from the hospital after Israeli forces withdrew on April 7th. The UN Human Rights Council on Tuesday said more bodies were even found at Anshifa Hospital. Now, what you're going to see in a moment is the conflation of these, or other stories, in fact. But it goes, according to Al Jazeera's correspondent, Hani Mahmoud, those being retrieved from the grave included women, children, patients, medical staff, you know, so the usual, right? Which is what we continue to see, unfortunately. And as I understand it, even their organs were missing, like we've continued to see. Now, actually, we should have grabbed that. The discussion of both Human Shield, but also the organ trafficking are both open secrets. The NABRA procedure for Israel to use Human Shield is literally documented by the UN and most human rights groups going back decades. But let's pretend like it's not a real story because we're a racist. But here's the other one. It's very clear, and there's lots of documentation, Israel's open secret of Palestinian organ theft. It's happened a long time before October 7th. They've even already caught it happening. EuroMed Human Rights Group has already reported it. From Al-Shifa, they were caught. The bodies they returned were missing organs. It's not a new story. It was Hani Mahmoud. He said medical staff and evacuees who had managed to leave the hospital before the Israeli army's withdrawal had described scenes of horror, mass killings, and arrests to the point the entire hospital turned from a place of healing into a massive graveyard. We just heard the IDF member telling you this is happening. We've got Israeli corporate media telling you it's happening. You've got all sorts of insiders, people reporting on this, people on the ground. You've got human rights groups. You've got the UN. You've got Palestinians themselves. But let's just err on the side of whatever the IDF said, right? Because that's smart or not, or it's blind faith and a lie, or rather a statement when you've got a mountain of evidence on the other side of it. Because let's make it clear, they're not challenging with other evidence and going, here's why they're lying. I'm going to show you the weak attempts they've made. They're just going fake news. That's not true. Gaza, Hamas did it. Ravina Shamdasani, a spokeswoman for the UN's Human Rights Office, said some of the bodies found in Khan Yunis Hospital were, quote, found with their hands tied and stripped of their clothes. General, you can read the rest of it. There's other stuff in there, but that was the main point. And Mariv Zonsi, I always mess up her name, Zon Zine, writer for 972 magazine, cites the CNN article, Mass Grave at Gaza Hospital. And if you read this for yourself, it's quite clear what's being reported is the IDF action. As Caitlin Johnstone writes, a mass grave created by the IDF has been uncovered at Gaza in a Gaza hospital where Palestinian civilians appear to have been the victims of a gruesome massacre. What number that is so far? I don't know. And she writes in quotes, bah, that's old news, Caitlin, you may be saying. We already know about the massacre and mass graves, which were discovered a few weeks ago at the Al-Shifa Hospital. And she goes, no, that's a different mass grave from a different IDF massacre at a completely different Gaza hospital. The now completely destroyed Al-Shifa Hospital was in Gaza City. She goes, I'm talking about the Nasir Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, where some 210 bodies have reportedly been discovered in a mass grave after Israeli forces withdrew from the city earlier this month. Two different massacres, two different hospitals, two different mass graves full of Palestinian civilians. The idea for just attacking hospitals, mowing down civilians, trying to bury the evidence of their crimes. We've even caught them on video using bulldozers to bury bodies in the sand or bury them in the dirt. It's on video. It's clearly the IDF, and no one's even denied those videos. This is how shockingly obvious all of this is. She writes, so naturally, we're seeing the Western political media class focus very hard on the problem of anti-Semitism allegations in college campuses. Obviously, right? Instead of the news, we redirect to some kind of an outrage story based on false allegations, which we will probably get to. She writes, quote, Biden denounces anti-Semitism on college campuses amid Columbia protests, reads a new headline from the Washington Post. As protests continue at Columbia, some Jewish students feel targeted, New York Times writes. White House condemns blatantly anti-Semitic protests as agitators engulf Columbia University, Fox blares. Columbia University faces full-blown crisis as rabbi calls for Jewish students to return home, says CNN. See, it's points like that, that you get the Zionist propagandists that come out and say, Jewish people can't even come. They've been told to go home. Well, no, there's a Jewish rabbi saying that. Is that what they all think? No, I'm going to show you videos of plenty of Jewish people marching with the Palestinians and everybody else going, I feel perfectly safe. I don't know what they're talking about. So at the very least, there's a disagreement about what's safe or not. The bottom line is they're simply going, they're Palestinians. They're fighting for Palestine. Therefore, I feel unsafe because either they've bought the narrative that that means they hate you because you're Jewish, or they're lying for the Zionist agenda. Either way, there's not there. Look, the reality is you will always find an individual. In any group, anywhere you go in the world, there's going to be somebody that probably irrationally hates somebody. The truth of the bigger story is that's not the full picture. And the vast majority of people do not do any of that. And in fact, we'll also show you examples of Zionists getting caught pretending to be Palestinian protesters so that they can create a narrative about how they're violent, which, by the way, has been a very clear part of this. The fake stickers they've been using, posting stickers that go, killing children is occupation or is resistance or whatever, just like really stupid lowbrow things that are obviously not what anybody in this movement would post. Even if they thought it, they would be stupid enough to post that. And most of them do not. I don't think any of them. I've never heard one person actually saying fighting for Palestinian resistance or freedom for Palestine, arguing that children are justifiable targets. But that is exactly what Zionists pretend they think. So that's why you get stickers like that, because that's how clearly transparent this all is. She says, getting far less attention than the fact that some Zionist university students are feeling uncomfortable feelings because other students say Palestinians are human beings is the fact that Israel is establishing a pattern of massacring civilians, burying them in mass graves outside hospitals in Gaza, or the fact that the IDF has been butchering children in Rafah, which is also happening, or the fact that the International Criminal Court is reportedly considering charging Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli officials for war crimes. I'll believe that when I see it, but that is up in the air right now. Those matters are important, she writes. Just not nearly as important as how some Western Jews feel emotionally upset about pro-Palestine protests. Like, think about how silly that is. Now, let's even pretend what they're saying is true, that they're there protesting because they hate Jewish people. How is that still more important than the murder of people, civilians and children and so on, and the covering up of it? But it's also not what's happening. They're protesting for Palestinian resistance, Palestinian freedom and self-determination. All of those are legally protected, even resistance, because an occupied power gives the legal reality to the occupied to have legal armed resistance, not targeting civilians. Anytime that happens in regard to that, it's considered a crime. It doesn't then invalidate the legal armed resistance. We've gone over this many times. That's one of the most problematic points for both the United States and Israel, because they're both illegally occupying groups that they continue to point at as terrorists when they resist. Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Venezuela. I mean, any group there, any place they're involved with, that's what they've done. Now, it says those matters are important. Did I leave it right there? Those matters are important, just not nearly as important. Yeah, as it says, for that, the world must stop spinning on its axis until this extremely egregious problem has been addressed, which is that they feel emotionally upset about protests, which is the truth. All the Western spin and distortion around Israel's mass atrocities in Gaza these last 6 months has revolved around centering feelings over human lives, how Western Jewish Zionists are feeling about pro-Palestine sentiments, how Joe Biden's feelings secretly feel about Netanyahu, how Israel feels about October 7th. Whenever there's an opportunity to focus the narrative on what feelings are being felt by a politically convenient population, the Western press falls all over themselves to do so with tumescent enthusiasm. Interesting word. Tumescent means swollen or becoming swollen. Interesting. Well done. Whenever there's an opportunity to focus on Israeli atrocities, the Western press are nowhere to be found, which is what they're known for. Whether it's Israel or anybody else, they are fair weather journalists. And I don't know how you can call that journalism. It says if you belong to a group that isn't supported by a Western empire, you can see your entire family murdered right in front of you, and the Western political class, media class will still won't consider you a victim. If you belong to a group that the empire regards as human, then even someone offending your feelings will be viewed as an unforgivable hate crime. And there's a, for the podcast, there's a meme with a guy looking upset with no microphones in front of him saying Palestinians being massacred. The other side with every microphone leaning up to the one woman says Western Zionists feeling offended. It's exactly what's happening. Now, Aviva Klumpas, one of the classic Zionist propagandists so far that I can recognize, in regard to somebody posting about the bodies being found in the graves. She writes, Palestinians claim they discovered a mass grave dug by Israel at Nasir Hospital in Gaza. In bold, she writes, caught in another lie. Oh, really? She goes, here's a video from January showing Palestinians digging the graves and burying their dead at Nasir Hospital. Oh, well, is that what's happening? No. She's caught lying herself, but I don't think she even cares. I don't think, as I said many times, I don't think any of them actually care. I think it's about trying to manipulate a certain amount of the population when they already know they've lost this narrative. I really believe that. And maybe the individual doesn't know that, but here's the point. And this is easily verifiable. The video is from the location highlighted in red, which is down here, which contains 36 bodies. The second locations, which were discovered, are two spots highlighted in blue. That's the story from the 300 bodies we're discussing. They contain, thus far, 400 bodies combined. The entire complex is Nasir Hospital and Mubarak Hospital inside the same perimeter wall. He goes, I wouldn't be too eager to remind everyone that this is the second set of mass graves they've discovered at the same hospital complex. Now, the point is, the argument here that this is necessarily only the reality of the building we're even talking about. Let's take the first point. And she goes, no, they're caught. That's the wrong hospital. Well, the reality of every one of these locations are that these people were forced to bury bodies that were killed by the IDF members. But let's just even pretend that she's right about that. I disagree. The point is that you're now conflating an old video that's not the location that you're claiming it is. Right? That's the lie. And we can prove it. But is she going to retract something? Is she going to come back and go, oops, I made a mistake? No, it just moves forward. And the reality is she's lying or doesn't know any better and trying to bury, no pun intended, the reality that all of these people were murdered by the IDF. Here is Saeed Arakat asking about this. And I believe... I'm just going to brush by because I think the clip is simple. Where basically he's asking about this. She's asking the State Department about the mass graves. And I think I already played this, actually. And he said more than 300 bodies have been found. The UN is calling for an independent investigation. Would you support it? His answer, we'll ask Israel. I mean, that's actually his answer. We're speaking with Israel. I mean, if it was Iran accused, we're going to talk to Iran? Well, no. So there's different treatment. And you can argue it's allies versus whatever. The point is the law is not supposed to be applied that way. And that's the point. They don't act within the law. They are at least perceived themselves to be above the law or that they are the law. That's the truth. Now, here's what's hilarious to me. Here's a video that was done by CNN, Christine Amanpour. And here's what she's writing, at least. We just want to give him a dignified burial. Overwhelming grief as a mass grave containing over 300 bodies has been uncovered at Nasir Hospital in Khan Yunis. And she reports the reality, that the evidence that we can prove, and they don't like that. This person says, do your job as a journalist, right? It's only your job in their mind if you blindly go along with whatever Israel says without any evidence or due diligence. That's what they call a journalist, at least in this propaganda world. She says the IDF has already confirmed that the bodies were buried by Palestinians. That's it. They stood up and go, that's not true. And to this person, that's more important than all of the evidence we've compiled and all of the independent groups and all of the journals that have seen it and all the doctors who have spoken out, like from Al-Shifa's discussion, like Ghassan Al-Busita, who is a London doctor who worked there, who's been screaming about the reality until Germany tried to deport him because they didn't want him to report on the obvious and provable atrocities. That's the whole point here, guys. They know that. And all you side with is the IDF said? Yeah. And as Adam writes out, IDF confirmed are the most meaningless words in existence. Here is the United Nations. Mass graves in Gaza show victims' hands were tied, says UN Rights Office. And the point is, it's obvious this was an IDF act, guys. And this is clear in anybody with a brain and integrity, in my opinion. David Miller writes, what are we supposed to do with this deluge? Let you say deluge or deluge of images of horror. Back in October last year, he says, I thought that Zionism was racist, imperialist, colonial, and genocidal. I put that case to the court in my tribunal, which started on October 16th, 9 days after the launch of Al-Aqsa flood. The court determined that my views were, quote, worthy of protection in a democratic society. But since then, the horror has mounted day by day. It's kind of unfathomable. It's not just that we need to dismantle Zionism. It needs to be expunged from the face of the earth. This is a monstrous ideology which is incapable of reform. It certainly appears that way. Every single Zionist organization needs to be abolished, every single one. Now, same point. I argue that broad-stroking anything is ignorance, is problematic. It's certainly possible that I would argue simply the obvious reality that Zionism in all of its forms has been clearly acting in the same way ever since I've ever seen it, or ever, like the overlap even in its history before the occupation of Palestine and 75 years since. Biden is a Christian Zionist. Do we support his actions? I mean, the point is, I think it's obvious that this does appear to be a problematic political ideology. But that doesn't mean every person who believes they're a Zionist believes that ideology or even understands that. Like, there's probably people in this country that call themselves Christian Zionists but don't realize that. Or any other number of examples of their under religions. That's my point. So as always, broad stroking is something we shouldn't do. But my point is obvious that the actions of the leading Zionist people in the world are something that needs to be called out. And he highlights the reality. One of four mass graves that were discovered in the Nasir Hospital complex after the withdrawal of Zionist forces. And again, Al-Busita trying to call out the reality of what he's seen personally happen in Al-Shifa. They don't want it to happen. They don't want it to happen, so they try to deport him. Ashok Kumar, writes, everyone, please read this. What happened at Al-Shifa will go down as one of the most depraved acts of mass murder in modern history. Now I'll let you read this for yourself. Here's the article from Mondeweiss. Here's just the quote. I'll read the secondary part. During the massacre at Al-Shifa Hospital, the Israeli army, as we've already proven, talked about, and multiple doctors, by the way, which I think I even have one still, I'll play it next, shot patients in their beds, and doctors who refused to abandon the sick, separated people into groups with differently colored bracelets, and executed hundreds of civil government employees. Imagine the hypocrisy, the absurdity of labeling people with different colors as you're pointing back to the Holocaust with everything that happens. And here's the worst part. Here's what they were saying. At least according to the people that were there. Come out, you animals. How the massacre at Al-Shifa actually happened. This is the kind of thing that's getting willfully, almost gleefully ignored by most of the people pretending they fight for rules-based international order. Now, here's one of these clips I've just recently played. This is Dr. Nick Maynard telling you the same thing.
Every single part of the hospital has been destroyed. The whole infrastructure of the hospital has been destroyed. When I spoke to Marwan yesterday, he told me there were 107 patients still in the hospital, 60 medical staff. God only knows what has happened to them. I think we've seen some of the pictures. Surgeons I know have been executed in the last 48 hours there. Bodies have been discovered in the last 12 to 24 hours who have been handcuffed, with their arms behind their back. And so there is no doubt at all that multiple healthcare workers have been executed there in the last few days.
You believe executed by whom, Doctor?
By the Israeli Defence Force.
Why would they seek to execute surgeons and medical professionals?
Well, they've been doing it since October the 7th. Over 450 healthcare workers have been killed. Friends of mine that I have worked with over the years, many have been abducted as well, and nothing has been heard of them since. So there is no doubt in my mind, and I can bear witness from this from my time at Al-Aqsa Hospital and from talking to people, that there's been direct targeting of the healthcare system in Gaza, direct targeting of hospitals, and multiple killings of healthcare workers.
Any death is tragic, but this is not, and I say again, anyone dying in any sense. So this is not, and please don't be upset by this expression, collateral damage. This is specifically targeted, you're saying, medical professionals by the IDF to be taken off and executed, is your belief?
Most certainly, that is my belief.
Have you at any time seen anything that would lead you to believe that there had been terrorists who were hiding in the hospital?
Without exception, every single one has responded to say they have never witnessed any Hamas militants in the hospitals they have worked in.
I mean, there's other doctors saying the same. That clip is from a week or more ago, right? So that was all Shifa Hospital he was talking about. Multiple doctors there, not Palestinians, people that were there from other countries that were working and saw it for themselves, watched doctors getting shot. How is stuff like that get disregarded? It's mind-blowing to me. I mean, I'm not saying you have to blindly believe him, always question everything, but the fact that it's not even discussed, I've only seen that one platform even put them out there. Now, here is Mohammed Safa pointing out, and this is on the 16th, Israel just bombed 11 children to death in a playground in Gaza. Now, that's a story that historically, in any other context, would have been world-renowned around the world. People would have been overnight talking about this story, but not now, because that's just another 30 seconds in Gaza, right? 11 children, that's been killed in an hour, in a normal day, in Gaza. It makes me sick to even say that out loud. Here, Scott Ritter wanted to point this out, that I think is very relevant to realize the point I made earlier about why the U.S. government is not just ignoring this, they're part of this. He writes this on the 22nd. The U.S. currently has 24-hour satellite coverage of Gaza. The resolution of the images produced is good enough to discern individual humans. The U.S. has complete coverage of all communications by the IDF in Gaza. We saw them murder Palestinian prisoners. We heard them give the orders. He means the U.S. government, by the way. I think it's important not to conflate the government with the people of this country. Very different things. Today, we're taught to kind of make them the same thing, or they're not. There's the country, which is the people, and there's the government, which is a part of the government country that is chosen by the people to become some kind of temporary leadership. But the idea of conflating them is a problem, because then you see them as they're supposed to work for you, but they don't. They act like you work for them. That's why it's important. But going back to the point, we saw them murder Palestinian prisoners. We heard them give the orders. Our silence makes us complicit, right? That's why I think if you were the government, that point would be more clear. The government, the U.S. government saw them murder Palestinian prisoners. The U.S. government heard them give the orders. Our silence makes us complicit. And you can say that means the government too, but I argue anybody, individuals watching it happen. After Auschwitz, we said never again. We used that horror to justify the creation of Israel. Again, he's talking about the U.S. government. And now Israel has turned into that, which the world then condemned. Now, the reality is the Zionist government, even before it was Israel, was always that. And that's the point about the overlap with Nazism that cannot be ignored, that finally is being entertained, at the very least, by people that never would have allowed this conversation before. And I was going to include... Where is it? There you go. The same one I included last time. The important clip. Oh, wait. Maybe that wasn't the one. Let's see. This one? Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Well, in any case, the bottom line being that this is a Haaretz article that you can read for yourself. First of all, the point is, we've discussed this in the show, Zionism versus Nazism. The reality of the overlap, the truth of the very clear effort by the Zionist party to align itself with Nazi Germany. You can look this up on Wikipedia for crying out loud. And the fact that, as he writes here, the Lehi part group, which is the one of the foundational aspects of Zionism, continue to support, to seek to ally with Nazi Germany even after the final solution, which, by the way, in an interesting oxymoron or contradiction was the very reason they argued the state of Israel was created to fight, defend things like this, even though you can prove that their foundational aspects were allowing, if not involved. That's important, as much as that's offensive to people that don't like the truth. Now let's see where we are, about almost 2 hours. I'm probably going to have to wrap it pretty soon, but I want to make sure we include this. I'm going to go through some of these clips with Sam and then maybe jump past the Iran part pretty quick. But the important part about this is, coming off of all these obvious crimes, the stuff we're talking about here, the mass graves, the IDF killings, this is why they refuse to openly state that they, and I don't even know why they think that's going to give them some kind of leeway, but they refuse to state that the Geneva Conventions apply to Palestine, to Gaza. Which, of course, it does. And Sam will make this unbelievably clear. And the fact, this is one of them. Decensored News and Sam's work, along with Saeed and Matt Lee and the rest that truly ask real questions at the State Department. I mean, my point was that all these clips are great and they show you how ridiculous this is. But this one is something special. The way that they're so, it's like not trying not to say the word Palestine, which is embarrassing, which we now know was directed by Israel in our own. Rather, the supposed representatives of our government did what Israel asked them to do instead of what the people want them to do, which is their true nature. But the reality being that they squirm around this conversation, like they refuse to acknowledge it. In fact, what Matt Miller says almost makes it obvious that they will not acknowledge it, because they do not think the Geneva Convention applies to Gaza, which then gives Israel the right in their mind to do whatever they want. Maybe that's their last saving grace of a legal argument. I don't know. But he wrote, just got out of a State Department briefing, asked about, and this is important, the sound of women screaming and babies crying was heard late at night on both Sunday and Monday. When some of the residents went out to investigate and tried to help, they were shot at by these quadcopter drones. This has been reported by corporate media. It's been reported around, I think one of them was Middle East Monitor. Or no, it was Middle East Eye. I've seen Euromed Monitor. It's not a small story. They're putting out quadcopters that are sounding babies crying and women screaming to try to draw out Palestinians that want to help them, and then they shoot at them. How does that not show you? I mean, it sums up who they are. It says, and asked about the U.S. government refusing to recognize the Geneva Conventions. Euromed Monitor reports this. The Israeli army broadcasts intimidating sounds to lure, kill, and forcibly displace civilians in Gaza. How disgusting is that? Playing on their actual good nature. But here's Sam writing, quite a con. The U.S. government has attempted to set up a fake legal narrative without even stating what the narrative is. They pretend the 14th Geneva Convention doesn't apply to Gaza, but completely obscure that position from the public. This is important.
Recognize the Geneva Conventions as applied.
This part just repeats at the end, I believe. Let's get to the... right here.
The sanctions against Iran.
Yeah.
Just broadly speaking...
I sent our exchange for Monday around to a series of international lawyers. I don't know if you're familiar with Richard Falk. He's a very prominent international lawyer, taught at Princeton for years, was the UN rapporteur. He emailed back to me, Gaza remains, from the perspective of international law and the UN, an occupied Palestine territory subject to the 4th Geneva Convention. I don't believe that Israel recognizes the 4th Geneva Convention for all of these decades. I don't know what U.S. policy is on that question. So that's one question. Does the U.S. recognize the Geneva Conventions as applying to Palestinian territories?
Sam, what I'm just going to say is what you've heard us say before, is that we believe...
I'm not interested in that. I'm asking a specific
question. Well, that's the answer that I have for you, which is that we believe wholeheartedly that Israel has every right to defend itself. And
I mean, how is that even perceived to be an appropriate answer? So the only way you can even take that response is that somehow the statement that we acknowledge Geneva Conventions as applying to Gaza is contradictory to the fact that you believe Israel's right to defend themselves, because it actually is, because they actually literally don't have the right to defend themselves in this legal context. My point is always that everybody anywhere has a right to defend themselves. But when you're an occupying power, and we've gone over this ad nauseum, the idea of the belligerent occupier, and they, in every way, they do not meet any justification to defend themselves. In every way, they are exactly what is not allowed. They are the occupier. This is not a state-to-state battle. And what he's doing here is essentially admitting that by saying, in response, that they have a right to defend themselves.
defend its security. And what happened on October 7th would be unacceptable to any country. And steps must and should be taken.
About another country.
Steps
talking
must
about...
and should be taken to ensure that those events cannot be repeated. Now, I've taken three of your questions. I'm going to work
one
the room.
Country attacking Alex, another. We're talking.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. I have two topics, but before we dive into my...
I'm going to pick up where I left off yesterday. Does the U.S. recognize the Fourth Geneva Convention as applying to Gaza and the West Bank?
Sam, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the legal aspects of this. I would have to double check for you.
It has been longstanding U.S. policy.
What does that even mean? You have to double check for me? Like, again, that is a terrible answer. That at the very least, shows that it might not. And how is that possible? How are you actually taking the stance that it might not apply to Gaza? That's wild. Because there's only two ways to look at this. Either that is occupied Palestine, which means they do, it's a state of their own, or it's now part of Israel that they're bombing themselves. There's only two ways you can look at that. So how does it not apply? It's just shocking how criminal these people are.
That the Fourth Geneva Convention does apply. Indeed, if the Fourth Geneva Convention doesn't apply, it's not clear to me what legal constraints there are on Israel.
Exactly.
The Hansel memo was issued by Cyrus Vance when he was Secretary of State. That was U.S. policy. That's been U.S. policy. Pompeo seems to have said, we're not going to abide by this.
Of course.
Has this State Department, has the Biden-Blinken State Department effectively abrogated decades of U.S. policy and adopted the Pompeo policy on this question?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I love this. It's because it's just so painful. Like, I think they do that because they think that they're going to kind of trail off into something else. But the way this goes right after this is just embarrassing for him, because it's obvious he knows what he's talking about. He's just trying to play it coy so he doesn't have to answer the question. But this is me. I just want to point out because it's funny and Sam makes him look stupid.
On this question,
I'm not sure what you're referring to, but
okay, the Hansel memo is.
I understand what the Hansel memo is, but
you
I'm
do
asking
okay.
Your question
does it still apply?
Pretty simple, right? And so you know about it. So you know it's clear that it's everything about them is dishonest, which is, by the way, not unique to these people. It's always been the case if we're just aware of what our government truly is and always has been. But it's hilarious to me how people pretend these guys are not just that their job is not to lie to you. That's what their job is. Their job is to literally lie to you and obfuscate fact.
Does this State Department still abide by the Hansel memo?
We have had no change in policy as it relates to the Hansel memo, which is something that Matt has spoken to a number of months ago as well. But let me just reiterate, Sam, that this we have, from the forefront of this conflict, we have talked about very clearly the need for ensuring that this military operation is conducted in accordance with international law.
Operation, right? He's flustered, right? The point is, your aunt, you fell back to the talking points. KJP, right there. What was I saying in the beginning? Let's just repeat that same thing again. Has nothing to do with the Hansel memo, has nothing, well, other than international law, has nothing to do with the idea of the Geneva Conventions. You just go, they have a right to defend themselves. We think we stand by the right. We tell them we need to. It's meaningless. Why? Because we've heard it every single day for the last 7 months and nothing has stopped. It's ridiculous. You're ridiculous.
That's
but
something
which
we continue to
law?
Talk about.
You
we,
won't say that, you, abo- that, you,
to
that you
abide
recommend.
By that today.
But which law? Which law? The Fourth Geneva Convention or not?
Go ahead, Alex.
Which law? It's a free fire zone if you're not going to abide by the Fourth Geneva Convention. Which law? You're creating the legal construct
Sam,
for...
Sam, we've taken two of your... If you're going to interrupt your colleagues, I'm going to ask you to leave.
No, I'm interrupting you.
The rest of the room has questions that they would like to get to.
I'm sure they do, but...
I've taken your question every day of this week.
Thank you.
Alex, please
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
I just haven't gotten an answer.
Please go ahead, Alex.
Sure.
Can I get a yes or no as to whether or not the U.S. accepts the Geneva Conventions as applying to the occupied Palestinian territory?
We, of course, accept the Geneva Conventions. Go ahead.
Okay, I wasn't able to get that before. Thank you.
So the point is, he said, I accept the Geneva Conventions. He did not answer whether they apply to Gaza. And I think Sam wants to follow up on that exact point. That's what he does.
So, no, just a follow-up on the when you said yesterday that the Geneva Convention, you recognized the Geneva Convention, you meant it with respect to the Israeli occupied territory.
Exactly what I said.
But you didn't say the occupied territories.
Exactly what I said.
So you don't recognize it with respect to the
state of the briefing ended about 30 seconds.
But I didn't get called on again.
Yeah.
I played that one before. Yeah. I didn't call you on purpose. You know, it's very obvious. And so he basically admitted that. I said exactly what I meant. So it's clear that he's trying to sidestep the point. These people are disgusting genocide. What? They're complicit in genocide. It was another word we could use there. Clearly, they know it's happening. Clearly, their job is to hide that fact. I mean, think about living with that. They're either sociopaths and they'll never care, or these people will have to live with this reality for the rest of their lives.
Euromed monitor, human rights monitor, reports that Israel is using drones to lure residents and then shoot them.
I've not seen that report, Sam, so I'm not going to comment on it. At every conversation that we have with our partners in Israel, we continue to stress the moral and strategic imperative that they have to work on deconfliction mechanisms and to ensure that.
Yeah, how's that worked out for you, bud? You said that yesterday, you said the day before, you said that for 7 months straight. What happened? Well, they're killing more people. Maybe you say it tomorrow. Maybe it'll work that time.
Civilian harm is minimized in every which way possible, and we'll continue to stress that every
My
way
God.
We can.
Will you Go look ahead. At this report?
I am sure we'll look at this report, Sam. I don't have any comment for it on it right now.
I'm kind of, at this moment, the thing that just popped into my head right now is like, this very well could lead to like the downfall of everything that, like, not just the government and the corruption government of the United States, but like the country itself. Like, think about how crazy it is that this is on the record. This is going to be compiled by people like us. This will never go away. This, once they finally get past the immediacy of the ongoing genocide, they're probably going to try to throw Netanyahu under the bus. They're probably going to try to pretend like it was just him and drag this thing forward, but it's not going to be allowed. People around the world are seeing this, and I think it's hilarious that you're going to be able to compile all this. Think about trying to stand in front of the world court and say, so 7 months, every day you simply said, we talked to them and we told them they shouldn't do bad things, and then they went out and did bad things and we can prove it. And then you asked them the next day and you said, we told them to stop doing bad things. And they went and did bad things every single day. It's going to be a sitcom. It's a cartoon, because that's ridiculous. You're going to just let them keep doing it. I mean, we all see it. You know, you see it too. And you just keep saying, we asked them to stop, or we told them they have an obligation to follow international law that they haven't done for 6 months forward. This is going to be remembered, guys. The history will, like I said, when this first started, this will be remembered for 1,000 years. And people balk at that. Look back at things we still talk about from wars from 1,000 years ago. This is that unprecedented, not just because of the people being killed or the actual genocide, but because of how this is shifting political dynamics the world around. This will be written about, mark my words, this is going to be remembered forever.
Do you recognize the Geneva Conventions as applied?
I've answered your question, Sam.
No, you've evaded it, and your colleague deceitfully responded to it. Do you recognize the Geneva Conventions? It's a simple question.
Go ahead.
Do you recognize the Geneva Conventions as applying to Gaza?
When you interrupt me, that's not.
No, I didn't get two questions.
You did. You asked a question about your report, and you asked to follow up. Please go ahead.
Refusing to answer it.
Go ahead.
Do the Geneva Conventions apply to Gaza or not? They apply to everywhere on the planet except for the Palestinians. Isn't that right?
Do the Geneva Conventions apply? Needs to be abided by.
I mean, it's just painful. It's a shallow, cowardly sidestep.
Do the Geneva Conventions apply?
You are now interrupting your colleague.
I'm interrupting you. I'm not interrupting you. I'm insisting on an answer to a critical question.
Right.
I'd like to ask.
So you're deceiving the American public.
You know what kills me? Why can't that guy right there be like, no, go ahead, Sam? I mean, like, really? Like, you're in the same room. You know the question's not being answered. You know, where's your integrity, man? Like, you're just mindlessly going into your job because you don't want to lose your access to this. I mean, stupid. It's the same thing we should always recognize. If everyone in that room didn't just let them roll over them. Well, they need those people in that room more than we need them, because they need them to be able to relay the story at the very least. And the point is that if that guy just said, hey, answer Sam's question, he'd probably be happy. It would make a huge story if everyone in the room just kept acknowledging the same question and highlighted the fact that they're simply refusing to answer a basic reality. It would be a big deal, wouldn't it? Now, Matt Lee, to a degree, does this with the next clip. Thank God for people like that that are actually stepping up to ask real questions. And I always love how it's funny to me. And I don't even know what it is. I mean, clearly he's been there forever. I respect the person for the many questions he's asked that are powerful. It's funny to me the reverence they have, like Matt Lee and what's his name again? I always forget his name. Patel or it's something like that. Let me look again. But watch how Matt Lee responds and how the guy basically the way they respond to him, it makes me laugh.
Were you able to find out from Elle or anyone else if there's any place in the world that the Geneva Conventions do not believe the Geneva Conventions apply?
I to my knowledge, I cannot think of a region or a jurisdiction where we don't.
To my knowledge, like, what a slimy answer.
And our long viewpoint is that the principles reflected in the Geneva Convention, that those are principles that should be complied with
everywhere.
So it applies in Gaza.
We have said that it's up to both Israel.
Wow. I mean, how obvious is that?
And Hamas to comply with the international law,
including
the principles that we believe are laid out in the Geneva Conventions.
So is Israel the occupying power in Gaza?
That's the closest you'll get to an answer to that, which essentially is it's Israel's responsibility, not ours. But that's what he didn't want to say. You see, he got forced because Matt Lee pushed him to actually say, well, it's their responsibility to follow what we think might apply, if my opinion and my knowledge is correct. You know, just a slimy, slippery answer. And so that's why Sam immediately pounced and was like, okay, now that we got that out of you, what about the occupying power? Because the real point is that's what changes the entire conversation. Acknowledging it's an occupying power, which means through the Fourth Geneva Convention, they have a right to armed resistance, which changes everything. And they know that. That's why they're so desperately trying to hide this. Is that what a rules-based international order does? Is that what a democracy fighting for freedom does? No, it's what authoritarian liars do. Cover for their authoritarian buddies.
That is not what we believe to be the case, but we have lost.
And I'll just take it back a step, because the reality is, as Francesca Albanese, UN Rapporteur, and every human rights group and all of the UN, everybody with standing in that position in that international community says, it's an occupied territory. As she says, the international community is in lockstep and has been forever about the reality that Israel is an occupying power. So they're just going, we disagree. Because what's politically, it's politically unfavorable for us. Not because there's facts around it. Like, this is my point from before. Historically, the U.S. government, what did they always do in situations like this? If it's Russia and China, they look to the UN, look to the human rights groups, right? Look to the NGOs. Look, what are they saying? Weird how today all of them are saying this is an occupied power. All of them are saying that Israel's committing genocide, and they go, we disagree. That's why people are waking up. Because they can't hide that shocking contradiction.
Long said it is important that both Israel and Hamas comply with international law, including humanitarian law that's reflected in the Geneva.
So Israel is exempt from the obligation of being an occupying power in Gaza.
Thanks all.
You can't answer that?
Right, because the reality is what he just ultimately did was open that door. Right? If you say it applies, at the very least, that Israel should acknowledge it, that means that they are committing a crime, which, by the way, you guys know already. I don't need to explain that to you. Now he goes on to point out, when I followed up, they refused to recognize Israel as the occupying power in Gaza. Of course, we knew that would happen, effectively trying to render the Fourth Geneva Convention meaningless, even though we tried to play it down the middle right there, and trying to create a free fire zone in Gaza, or allowing one that's already existing. That's the point. Now he says, most recently, Ian Cosgrove of the Gray Zone asked Blinken himself after a news conference in which he pontificated at length about human rights around the world, which they always love to do, and the Secretary of State refused to give an answer on the record. How do we misunderstand that? This is the clip you saw before. Now, here's a hilarious reality. Mike Pence says, it's on the 11th of April, instead of demanding arbitrary limitations, that's what he said, on Israel's military response. Arbitrary limitations. America should fully support Israel's effort to eradicate Hamas in the south and secure her border from Hezbollah in the north. You mean the occupied power, the occupied territory that it takes from Lebanon? That's what he's talking about, because they love international law? No. They like law at all? No. They blindly support Israel and the Zionist agenda. That's the reality. It says our president should make it clear that Iran will pay a steep price, because it's Iran we're talking about? No, not at all, in fact. We'll pay a steep price if it continues to attempt to escalate the violence through its proxies, which is not what they are. Gaza, Yemen, Lebanon, Syria, or anybody else want to rope into this because Iran, bad guy, even though there's no evidence to suggest that any of that, other than the support of their resistance and helping and allies with arms, just like the United States does with all of its allies, the reality is there's nothing illegal happening. What you're seeing is illegal occupation of every single one of those territories, illegal starvation tactics on all of them, in fact. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's insulting that these people pretend to be the ones standing on the right side of the law and for freedom and democracy when every single thing they do is what we acknowledge as the problems in the world. We just point at the wrong person. And here's the craziest part. As she writes, arbitrary limitations is a strange description of the Geneva Conventions. The very thing they point at when they tell you Iran bad guy or Russia bad guy or China bad guy. She says, Mr. Pence, and what borders do you speak of? Israel refuses to declare any borders and has instead been usurping, stealing, and annexing Palestinian territory for decades. It's factual. And even they have acknowledged this in other contexts, but of course, when they want to, there's a border. When they don't, it's played out of both sides of their mouth. It always has been. When they want it to be, it's Gaza's run by Hamas and they control everything. But when they in the border, but when they don't, they act like it's all Israel and there is no Hamas, no Palestine, right? It's as everything with the Zionist agenda, it's flimsy, it's see-through. And the only thing that makes it continue is people like Mike Pence blindly supporting it. But again, back to that point in regard to occupy. Well, I think I said it in general. Yeah, I mean, I'll make a point about Iran in 1 second. I think right here, actually, just very quickly. He mentions Iran, right? As if they're somehow, they're the ones causing this. And that was the point. He's saying that Iran, to make sure it's clear, Iran will pay a price if it continues to attempt to escalate. Like, this is how embarrassing this is. That pretty much everybody can recognize that Israel, you know why? Because their own people have said it publicly, recognize that Israel wants escalation. Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, they've stood up and said, literally quoted by the Times of Israel, we want a regional war. yet we disregard that and go, it's Iran doing it. They're trying to cause this to happen, which is why this is what the embassy attack, they were trying to make this happen. Derek wrote a great article about this. Are the violations of the Mexican and Iranian embassies a sign of the new normal in diplomatic relations? Right after they attacked the Iranian consulate building, which is what it really was, and it was part of the embassy. It's not always, but in this case it was. The Ecuadorian authorities raided a Mexican embassy to take one of the people they were giving asylum to. What, obviously, because they saw an opening. That's what we talked about. And I'll include a link to Brock just put out a great clip in regard to our recent show of the, it's entitled On the Brink of Global War as Iran Retaliates Against Israeli War Crimes. And we just put out an interview with Freddie Pontone, which I highly recommend you check out, breaking down Iran's response to Israel and the impending Israeli attack. And then we know after that, of course, there was this flimsy kind of a drone situation that was like praised as the biggest thing. But really, bottom line, I think this comes down to what we already published, what we discussed, I mean, that The Cradle published. Exclusive, an Iranian military security official has revealed that the U.S. contacted them, asking the nation to allow a symbolic strike to save face, which, by the way, is obviously what happened. They just made them look stupid for doing it, and they pretended like they had a win, but Israel's still seemingly saying they're going to do more. But it showed you that Iran took strategic action and threatened that they would respond 10 times harder immediately with everything that happened, and nothing happened. At the very least, that the drone situation didn't seem even worthy responding to. Apparently, one of their foreign ministers, when they asked about it, said, what drone, what attack? They laughed at it. So the point is, ultimately, their deterrence worked. Not deterrence lie, which is bombing a consulate and pretending that's deterrence. No, deterrence was a strategic attack meant to create actual deterrence. And you can disagree. But here's what's important in regard to the lie around all of it that Craig Murray pointed out. He says, I swear as a foreign British ambassador and 22-year career diplomat. Almost every U.S. and British embassy, which, by the way, the reason they claim this was a legal attack, even though it's a ridiculous argument in the first place, no matter what grouping was there, that there were terrorists or spies or whatever else, that it's not really a consulate, it's intelligence, and that's why we bombed it. Here is a former diplomat for 22 years telling you almost every single U.S. and British embassy hosts a CIA or MI6 station. I don't even know why we would balk at that. Obviously, it shouldn't be allowed to happen, but we know it is. It says all House military personnel. That's the reason they gave for bombing this place. It has military, so does every one of them. Many serve as special forces, which means they use that as a relay station for their operations, even though that's against the law. He's telling you the reality. He says that the Iranian diplomatic premises were qualitatively different is rubbish. But so is every other lie that we're getting from the Zionist government. But it's, I wrote a very important statement from former Ambassador Craig Murray stating that what I just read to you. And I wrote, rules-based international order. Obviously ridiculous. Mary from 972 Magazine again wrote, an isolated Netanyahu facing widespread criticism a week ago after the Iran attack has now the backing of all of the West and has deflected global attention from Gaza, at least for the time being. I believe it's now back. But this is something important to realize, that the entire Gaza conversation, just like using a military engagement with Gaza historically to boost his numbers, which has been proven by Israeli media, Haaretz, Times of Israel, Netanyahu has clearly benefited from drawing out this response from Iran. Netanyahu creating conflict to better his standing is something they've reported many times. And what happened immediately after Iran responded, everyone said, foul! Iran broke the rules! And everybody shifted the conversation. And he won back support with the Rafah conversation and everything else. Very, very clear. Robert wrote this article on the 19th. Israel's attack on Iran was either a complete failure or there is more to come. Now, I feel like it's in the middle ground right now. I feel like they're basically trying to decide if the juice is worth the squeeze. But they got caught lying about it. But here's what Ilan Levy said. You know, the disgraced Israeli government spokesman that weirdly seems to continue to be speaking on Israel's behalf, even in public formal settings. I don't even know how that makes sense. Even literally still says former Israeli government spokesman. But he spoke with Israel at an Israeli briefing. Just the other day. So who knows? I think it's all about trying to narrative the whole thing, right? But here's what he says. Sticking the sign consulate on the door doesn't mean it's not a military building. Again, either he's that dumb and doesn't understand that, as Craig Murray points out, that they all do that, or he just is trying to lie to you about why they should be bombed. But the point is, it doesn't matter. Let's just say they were using military, and even ignoring Craig Murray's point. If the sign was consulate, then you broke the law. It doesn't matter. And that's the reality of diplomatic relations, that there's the persona non grata route. If you think they're breaking the law, you could push them out. But to simply bomb them is a violation no matter how you spin this. So I love that this idiot continues to jump on and go, we committed crimes, and thinking that he's somehow defending himself. He says, sticking the sign consulate on the door doesn't mean it's not a military building. Just like the sign peaceful civilian nuclear reactor doesn't mean it's not a nuclear weapons facility. I mean, it's just embarrassing because most people, I think, are educated enough to realize that some of the, at the very least, these are not just stated facts. You know, for example, U.S. intelligence assessment says Iran not currently developing nuclear weapons. That was published on 2023, July 10. Okay, so the U.S. government says that you're wrong, Ilan Levy, but he doesn't care. He's just lying because Iran, bad guy, and that's the one doing everything, not our genocide, right? Here's the Politico article. Iran hints it could develop nuclear weapons if Israel attacks. That's what corporate media is trying to lie to you about, right? Do you think that's what happened? Iran's going, hey, we're going to violate our religious beliefs because Israel might attack us. Makes sense to people that are lied to about what Iran really is. But first of all, I think this was the last part, actually. I want to show you this, too. Iran warns it may change nuclear weapon stance in face of Israel. U.S. announces sanctions. Of course, we jump out and sanction you for no sanctions on Israel, no sanctions on... I mean, it's just hilarious what they do. A lie gets spread about Iran, and they flinch and they go over sanctions. Guess what? That's not actually what happened. Iran says nuclear weapons have no place in its nuclear doctrine. This is on April 22nd, 2024. You know why? Because you could say they're lying, but that's why I showed you this first, that even the U.S. government's own intelligence assessment says that they're not doing that. But the point is that they've stated that this is contrary to their religious beliefs. And so they're saying that's not true. The story itself comes from the reality. If you read it, it's a top Iranian commander delivered a statement saying, the bottom line is basically saying in a very opaque way that if they do attack us, that might change the conversation. Now, that doesn't even necessarily mean that we're talking about using nukes. And even if he didn't mean that, he's one individual. And the reality is they've made this undeniably clear that that's never on the table. And yet, what does the Politico and USA Today? Oh, my, Iran says they're going to, you know, creating the narrative that they're going to make weapons because Israel's been telling you they're going to forever. They've been telling you that they're 30 seconds away from a nuclear bomb for 40 years. It's embarrassing. And the truth is, IEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, even with the puppets put in place by the U.S. after Amato? I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden. The Japanese former leader of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who was assassinated, and right before he was killed, he said Israel was trying to kill him. It's a very real story. You can look it up. The point is that now, even with the people they put in place, guess what? The International Atomic Energy Agency has consistently confirmed that Iran is not seeking developing a nuclear weapon. But here's what Israel wants you to think. Today it's Israel. Tomorrow it's Paris. The world must sanction Iran's ballistic missile program and designate their military as a terrorist organization before it's too late. And they have this graphic, which I've seen circulated pretty much every day since they made this. And the same people you'd expect sharing it without, you know, the Michael Rapaport's of the world, the complete idiots out there. Iranian missiles coming to a city near you, like it's some movie poster. And it shows a bunch of missiles going for the Eiffel Tower. Like, where in the world is that even coming from? The only thing that makes that make sense is that Iran is a belligerent entity that's going to be overtaking the world if it just Israel wasn't in the way. I mean, how stupid is this? There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence they've even said that or ever claimed that or even one. Where's the first one they've taken? Show me a step outside of Iran where they go Hamas and the Houthi. Well, that's not the reality. Those are not proxies. And even then, they're not occupying the countries. And on top of that, even if you want to pretend that they are, how about the reality that the U.S. government outshines anybody in the world by a factor of 4 or 10 or 1,000, whatever you want to talk about. I'm trying to think of what it would be in comparative, like, what are they saying, like 4 countries? The reality is the U.S. government has occupied, destroyed, and continues to steal from countless countries in the world. But don't worry, Iran, bad guy there, focus over here. But how about the Azov movement, who has openly said in multiple settings, including their own documents, that if and when we take out Russia, we will spread the white race around the world. Openly telling you that they're the one, they point at the bad guys that they want you to think are bad guys and saying that's what they want. Well, Israel is over here going, we're going to take Egypt, we're going to take this country, we're going to make greater Israel. It's embarrassing. This is stupid. It really is. Not saying that Iran wouldn't be capable of that if they ended up in the position of the U.S., China, or Russia with that kind of a power, but I think any government would. The reality, though, is this is simply them projecting so you don't look at their genocide. And Robert just wrote an important article I wanted to highlight. The U.S. Israeli hand in Sudan's horrifying civil war. This is actually the second article he's written about the overlap of the U.S. government and Israel, but he also makes an important point about a lot of past genocides. Oh, frustrating. I didn't notice that was a different thing. I'll have to check that. That's just me editing fast because we were moving. That's some foreign HTML in there. But the point is, for the podcast, it's just small type on the article. He highlights the reality that the Israeli government, along with the U.S. government, have been involved in the Bosnia genocide, in the Rwanda genocide, which we recently covered, or any number of other horrifying genocides that they are taking a part in, if not creating, before, during, and after. And that is the Rwanda story. In fact, I'll grab that for you because it's important that you check that out. That was one that I was somewhat aware of until the 30 year passed the date, which just passed. I decided to do it really, you know, deeper into this, and it's pretty overwhelmingly obvious, including from Israeli media, that they were arming with Uzis as well as many other genocides, by the way. I mean actual provable genocides, not just crimes, where they armed them before, during, and after this stuff. It's unreal. Now, just a couple quick points about the Iran thing. This is one I wanted to point out back on the 15th. You might have seen this, but just this is how stupid they think everybody is. Or a better way to put it, this is how stupid David Cameron is, because he trapped himself with his own statement. And it's a good question by the corporate media person. Here's what they said.
Reckless and dangerous thing for Iran to have done. And I think the whole world can see all these countries that have somehow wondered, well, you know, what is the true nature of Iran? It's there in black and white.
What would Britain do if a hostile nation flattened one of our consulates?
Well, we would take, you know, we would take the very strong action.
I mean, how stupid is that? And of course, it just, they're bad guy and whatever they do is bad and we're good guy. Whatever they do is good, no matter what. Doesn't matter the context. Because, I mean, the point is you just simply highlighted that they bombed the consulate. I mean, their narrative would be that it's not a consulate. But we know that's the reality. And we know that they responded the way that any of these governments would respond. And yet they're bad. And when they respond to the action we know is a crime, we call them criminals. I mean, that literally sums up everything U.S. and Israeli foreign policy at this point. Now, I want to highlight something that I had a great conversation with Whitney Webb on the 17th. I recently mentioned it, the idea of the smart wall and her great research around that overlapping with Israel and the Unit 8200. The title was Manufacturing Bipartisan Consent for Biometric Surveillance. It's a great conversation. I wanted to highlight this again, the point I made earlier. Here's the Middle East Eye. Israel's surveillance tech has a monitored smart city in occupied Palestinian territories. Why? Because this is testing right now. This is like the AI systems. It's like the battle-tested weapons. This is coming to a city near you with Unit 8200 secret backing, of course. Here are three ways Israel tracked Palestinian movements: facial recognition, biometric databases, and more. But hey, Republicans, let's scream for a smart wall that'll be built for you by Israel. What do you think that'll include? Here's another point, by the way, and this is a side point that I think is relevant to all of this, and to including the surreptitious actions by Mossad and the things they do in other countries. An Israeli man was charged with arms trafficking in Malaysia after police found six illegal firearms in his hotel room. Rumors are circulating that he worked for his Israeli mobster and is linked to Mossad. If found guilty, he may face decades in jail. This person simply points out, for context, he entered the country with a French passport, as Israelis' passports holders can't enter Malaysia, but he is Israeli. The censor man says, yep, he also entered Malaysia via the UAE. It's obvious that there's more going on around a lot of this. Now, quickly about lies, I think are important to highlight. Yanis Tarawi points out that, President Herzog, who's like one of the most obvious, he's been caught with more of the more embarrassing lies around this whole thing, like some of the worst, you know, using a book cover from Amazon and claiming it was some chemical weapons instructions, like really poor and obviously provable lies. He highlights this image, this video of what is, I guess, October 7th. And he says, the world must not remain silent in the face of such crimes. Bring them home now. Which I probably should have put. There's a hostage point I'll clip that I'll show you in a minute. But here's what he writes. He goes, I've included the English translation that Isaac didn't want to include. I wonder why. He goes, I'm skeptical about what his expectations are from this video. Now, here's what's important, guys. And you can verify this for yourself. So, yes, there are people flooding around, and they're, you know, looks like they're acting however you want to perceive this. Here's what the person in charge of the bike and the hostage is saying: stay away. We need him. This is a prisoner. It's forbidden to hurt him. People, it's not permissible. It's religiously forbidden. The guy have safety responsibility from us. This is a guy is under safety. No one shall assault him. Anyone, don't get near him. These are prisoners, and all of them are under safety. And they're actually using weapons to protect. And as far as I can tell, that looks like Bebas, doesn't it? I'm not sure about that, by the way. Kind of. I think it does look like him, but I'm not sure. The point is, that does not work with the narrative, does it? That's exactly why they made sure that didn't. Yeah, I think that's Bebas, by the way. By the way, that's the father who came out and said his family were killed by IDF bombings. Now, by the way, I think that might be... No, let me see real quick. I want to include that here, if I have it. Yeah, right here, since we're talking about it. So, as he's saying, bring them home now! You know, the people that would come home, should they accept any of the ceasefires that have been offered, they don't want it home because they don't want the ceasefire. They want to continue killing all of them. And I think Hannibal Directive, including those people, like they've already killed many of them. Here's Israel saying, Hamas has released a video of hostage Hirsch Goldberg Polon. They say this is just another one of the attempts of psychological terrorism. And it says very clearly, don't watch the video. Instead, share the photo. Gee, I wonder why that is. Do you want to see? Here's what he was saying. Oh, actually, I think it just shows it right here. So the point is, I said, I wonder why they don't want people to see the video. Maybe because he says Israel's killed at least 70 hostages, and he openly calls out the Israeli government and Netanyahu by name. Now, of course, you could argue that this was coerced, and you should ask yourself that. It's certainly possible. The point is, if you watch the video, he's very animated. He's very forceful. And I think we've seen, by the way, let's not forget, we've seen more than half of these people come back from being hostages and continue to say they were treated kindly, continue to say they were fed and that Netanyahu and their government were bombing civilians, that they watched their own people get killed next to them. So let's realize that it's far more likely that he's being truthful here, and yet he still hates Hamas and is still a hostage and still wants to go home. But he says clearly, I was arrested on October 7th, he says. And he says, I'm seeking out entertainment with my, or I'm seeking, maybe translation thing, entertainment with my friends. He was at the festival seeking entertainment. He goes, instead, I found myself struggling to survive with serious injuries all over my body. Nevertheless, I took it upon myself to protect myself. He says, and the people who were afraid around me because there was no one to protect us that day. First damning accusation. And it says, Benjamin Netanyahu and his government should be ashamed of yourselves. He points at the camera. He says, Benjamin Netanyahu's government should be ashamed. And he says, because you neglected us along with thousands of other citizens. You should be ashamed of yourselves for leaving us for 200 days. Because they know that they're left there. So do the people protesting Netanyahu right now. That's my point. Most of them still want Gaza to be attacked, still don't care about Palestinians. But they want this to stop. They want to take Hamas's offer because they're tired of watching their own people get killed. It says, and all the efforts of the army have failed. He says, because the Air Force bombings killed about 70 detainees like me. Gee, I wonder why Israel doesn't want you looking at this. Also, you should be ashamed because all the deals that were offered, you were rejected. You don't want to end this nightmare? Benjamin Netanyahu and members of his government, at a time when you are holding lunches with your families, think of the detainees in the underground hell and the fact that they're starving too because they're not allowing food in. I added that. He does say without water, food, and sun, without the treatment I need for so long. I ask the prime minister and the government and the cabinet, every day we are here, you ignore us more and more, which is what I'm seeing too. And they're bombing them. You ignore our blood, he says. Do what is expected of you and bring us home immediately. Now, I kind of feel like this is genuine, right? I mean, that's my opinion, but question it. Now, I'll leave it there. I think it's obvious. Now, here's some other things I think are important, talking about manipulations, right? The idea they're lying about this video, that they don't want you seeing the real subtitles that show you what they were really saying, which is we're not going to hurt the hostages, right? Doesn't mean some people didn't on their own accord. Here's Emily Schrader, who's one of these, you know, I mean, this woman strikes me as especially problematic. It's my own personal opinion. But when you're watching her and the way that her face looks when people are talking about atrocities, when they're talking about genocide and murder, and she has this weird smirk on her face, and it just makes me sick. I'm just my personal opinion. But she writes, this is what University of Michigan anti-Israel protesters are sharing on campus today at their Gaza protest. And it says, freedom for Palestine means death to America. And somebody responded by going, look what I found as well. Oh my gosh, it's the same book. And it says, only boomers fall for Zionist propaganda. I mean, come on, guys. It's a screenshot of a book that we can't identify. We don't know where she got it from, or if it's even something she got from somebody there, or if it was handed to her by a Zionist liar. I'm not saying, for all we know, it could be something they're handing out. I'm just simply saying that for how many times these people have lied to you, it's shocking that it tells me that if you're only sharing, like if she could prove this, they would prove this. So in my opinion, if it was just a screenshot with what seems like a very oddly, like it almost looks like it's out of sync and not even with the words above it. Am I wrong? That's why I think that was Photoshop. But in any case, they've lied about everything. Everything. And it doesn't stop there. Propaganda & Co. says, false flag at Columbia. We are nearing confirmation on the identity of this undercover Zionist agent posing as a Palestinian supporter. What we've learned, They claim she is Jewish. I haven't backed up the research saying, oh, no, which, by the way, you know, Jewish in this context would have some meaning in the sense that they are, most of the people that are Zionists in this case are also Jewish, but it should not by default mean that she's something that's problematic. And it says no organizers at the protest have ever seen her before. And she was even asked not to hold the sign she's holding, which is pointing at other Israeli supporters and saying Al-Qassim's next targets, wearing a Palestinian, I forget the name of it off the top of my head all of a sudden, starts with a K, and wrapped around their face. I mean, that's kind of obvious, isn't it? And we keep, that's like the stickers and everything else. And now it turns out that they're finding out that she most likely is somebody that is there to try to create a problem. Here is a long list. And I'm going to skip this, maybe go over it again in the future, because you've seen most of these already. But Muhammad Al-Shida writes, Israel lies pathologically. Dozens of conclusively debunked government lies, most of them debunked by Israeli media. I mean, for example, lies about Hamas networks beneath Gaza's hospitals. This is the same one, the tunnels. I mean, the point is you can go through each one of these. Bombing refugees. Did Israel bomb a civilian evacuation route? Yes, they did. I mean, they lie about every single one of these. It goes on and on, and we know this. We've covered it all. Now, in general, I think I'm going to go ahead and leave it there, and we will get into the campus discussion. The bottom line is, guys, if you want the quick breakdown from me, it's not true. I mean, here's Mariv again from 972 Magazine. A lot of what's happening on college campuses, to me, she says, is a direct culmination of a generation's worth of effort to conflate anti-Semitism and criticism of Israel. Exactly. Exactly. Here's a Jewish mainstream writer from Israel telling you that. And the fact that they're trying to conflate everything here with some kind of terrorism, even though what they're doing is simply fighting for a free Palestine, which they then conflate with terrorism or anti-Semitism. But here is a Jewish person marching with the Free Palestine March. Here's what he has to say about it.
Of nothing but welcome from everyone I've spoken to. The idea that London is a no-go zone for Jews is just for the birds. It's rubbish.
These Jews have come out specially. There were 500 of us meeting outside Belgrave Square. We've all come here on purpose to show that that's rubbish.
Politicians are pushing it as just basically propaganda and to push their own narrative, to pretend that there isn't another voice that opposes the genocide going on in Gaza, to try and weaponize anti-Semitism to a degree.
We've been sold a false narrative, and I think it's really important for Jews everywhere to stand up and say, I'm not okay with this, and this is not being done for me.
I'm arguing that this is a much bigger movement than anybody's realizing. Now, there's plenty of people that I mostly agree with about what's going on. I get pushback in when I'm talking about large groups of Jews, Orthodox and otherwise, that are pushing back on this. And I think I'm right. Every time I say it, I'm saying I can't metrically verify. I can't tell you how many people are in this group, but I know there are large groups, like I often point out, Orthodox Judaism is a group, Torah Judaism is a group that is pretty prominent in multiple countries. Largely represent, you know, they have a pretty large group in Israel that gets, I've shown you them getting beat up on video before because they protest Zionism. But this is huge, guys. Right in the beginning, we had an entire group called Jewish Voices for Peace protesting in the Capitol. Like, we have to realize these people are actively promoting the idea that Zionism is not Judaism. I think it's a big movement. I think we need to acknowledge that, because otherwise we get trapped in this idea that most Jewish people are supporting what Zionism does. And I don't even agree with that. Now, I mean, it could be most, but I do not think it's some 90 to 10% concept. I think it's much bigger than that on the side of people that are seeing it. I just hope that's acknowledged.
Jewish people are not a monolith that all think the same. There's thousands of Jewish people who feel very comfortable in London and oppose the events in Gaza right now.
I've got a poster showing that I'm Jewish, that I'm supporting peace with Palestine, and I feel so welcome. People are really grateful that me and the rest of the Jewish bloc are out today. I've not experienced any anti-Semitism or anything that's made me feel uncomfortable.
There's always this talk about people feeling uncomfortable when people draw attention to what's happening in Gaza, but we're feeling uncomfortable about what's happening in Gaza.
Right.
There's genocide in Gaza.
Indiscriminate killing.
I mean, you get the point. Here's another one.
I'm a Jewish student at Columbia. When we talk about anti-Semitism on campus, that's taking the spotlight away from Gaza, away from Palestine, and the Palestinian students on campus, and putting it back onto me. I am perfectly safe here, and this has all been a distraction because they don't want us talking about the nonstop massacre of Gaza, of Palestinian civilians being taken out by the IDF. I grew up being taught that Israel was an important part of my Jewish identity, and part of being a Jew was supporting Israel. I was raised Zionist, and then I met a Palestinian for the first time and heard their perspective, and was able to realize that I was on the wrong side of this, that I'd been taught the wrong side of this. To me, calling in the police was an act of desperation. They know where the students stand. They saw the students come together to support their suspended and arrested friends.
Now, that's intelligence to me, right? It's not intelligence. Anybody can be wrong, right? But it's intelligence that allows you to be able to acknowledge that and correct, if you're in your opinion, not because somebody else tells you to, but what you see as the truth, and correcting that and going, you know what? I'm acknowledging this new information, and that swayed me, and I now think this. Now, you could still be wrong. The point is, I find that to be intelligence, to be able to stand back and go, hold on, there's some new information that's come to light, and not just blindly accept a certain stance as forever. The science is settled, right? This kind of nonsense we get pushed at today. Here's what Zasquirrel points out. Zionists and the media class are going insane with deranged smears of the mass student and faculty protests at the college across the West because it's a movement that has united Jews, Palestinians, whites and blacks and people of all backgrounds against the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And that is driving them crazy. But here's what we're seeing. As Sarah says, wow, Sarah Abdallah, this is insane. In Texas, this is Texas and University of Texas. Militarized state troopers now confronting peaceful protesters. Verifiably so. Look at them. They're actively standing with their hands in the air. Why are they doing this? What's the necessary reason? Using militarized police to stop them from this is violating their rights. But it's because there's a very clear Zionist influence that justifies this as they're terrorists, so do what you want. It's pretty alarming. I mean, it's shocking is what it is. And it's everywhere because this is showing you either everything has changed or it was never what you thought it was. Here's another one. NYPD forces now arriving at Columbia campus. Here's what Elon Levy says. Or first, actually, this is Jeff Melnick responding to Jeff Jacoby saying the Jew hatred is spreading to more left-wing campuses. And what he means by that is people that are fighting for free Palestine, because his ignorance is just saying you're all racist Jew-hating maniacs because that's the only person that exists in this conversation. That's stupid. But he says it's spreading. Students at MIT and Emerson College are promoting their solidarity, in quotes, like that's supposed to be some secret wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I hate Jews, with the anti-Semitic thugs and bigots at Columbia who have assaulted Jews, cheered Hamas, and called for Tel Aviv to be burned to the ground. Now, all these little spike, like little examples, many of which I argue are probably falsified, like the other things we've seen, certainly possible. But let's just say one person says we should burn them. Let's just say a group were chanting that. That does not then mean that everybody saying free Palestine means we hate Jews. It's dumb and it's ignorant, it's broad stroking. And we always used to say that was stupid. But here's the best part. Jeff says, Jeff, oh, that's funny. His name's Jeff too. Jeff Melnick responds to Jeff Jacoby and says, Jeff, those anti-Semitic thugs include my Jewish daughter. You pernicious F-wad, is what he says. It's just what the point is, you're stupid for conflating everybody there as some anti-Semitic maniac when my Jewish daughter was there fighting for free Palestine. Now, they can go as far as what Ben Shapiro and the rest of these people have done to say they're self-hating Jews and they're still anti-Semitic, which is just ridiculous. Certainly possible, I guess, but it seems ridiculous to assume any of that. But here's what Elon Levy said on top of it, just like everything else, not something I'd show off about. Making the obvious point that his daughter is disgusting because she's there. Doesn't matter that she's Jewish. Zionists decide if you're Jewish. You see how that works? Not whether you practice that religion. No. Zionists decide if you're Jewish enough in the sense that you support their Zionist agenda enough, therefore you are Jewish now. If not, then you're a bad Jew-hating anti-Semite. Not because you hate Jews, but because you don't agree with us. That's the Zionist mentality. And again, back to the point, Matty Hassan pointing out, if you're simply abusing Jews for being Jews, then you're disgusting, you're anti-Semite, and you're no friend of the Palestinians. I agree, but he says, not enough. You can't do that because you still hate Israel, which then shows you the point. It's not about whether or not you hate Jews or not. It's about whether you don't like Zionist state of Israel that they conflate with all of Judaism, which even he says, the vast majority, which means it's not all. You see how dumb this is and how easy it is to break this down to show you that they're just manipulating the world. How that ever happened with how bad the propaganda is, I have no idea. Farrakh points out, look at the Gideon. Oh, I'm going to skip this in general. This point is one of the other examples we've made before. Here is one of these kind of becomes recently famous in this conversation. Gideon Falter, acting like he was getting attacked by the crowd, which then gets reported by every Zionist out there in the world that he's attacked and everyone's being attacked because they all hate Jews. Guess what? Here's the police talking to him. And here's David Icke giving you the full 13 minutes so you can watch the whole thing. But if you watch this, here's the actual breakdown. And I'll go right to the point where it says, he's saying that you've been going in and out of the crowd, that you've been bumping protesters like you've been running into them on purpose. And he goes, I don't know who that person is. And he goes, he's a police officer. Oh, oops. You're an idiot because you got caught. And the point is, the breakdown is very clear. He says, I've been telling you to stop running into protesters. And he goes, that's not true. Well, he's saying he saw you do it. And he goes, I don't know who he is. He's an officer. Now, of course, the officer could be lying. Of course, the point is, I guarantee they've already started calling the officer a secret Palestinian anti-Semite or whatever, because anybody not on my side is an anti-Semite Hamas member, right? The point is, these people are actively trying. I saw a video where a guy bumped his own head on a flag and was like, no, you're hitting me with your flag. It's everywhere. That's not to say that there aren't people out there committing crimes or acting in racist ways. The point is that it is actively being lied about in every sense, everywhere. And what worries me about this, well, here's like another example, by the way. This is David Miller saying, so it turns out the guy with Gideon Falter of the so-called campaign against anti-Semitism actually works for the SQR group, which provides security for the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, last December. His name is Vincentu Chukwutia. Probably mispronounced that, this guy right here. The firm also happens to be run by two ex-Mossad officers, but, you know, no big deal there. The point is obvious what that means. And here is a very alarming article. Ben-Gavir examines as his police will promote the establishment of preparatory classes for Jewish communities abroad. So not only are you having Unit 8200 intelligence companies being popped up in other countries as if they're not connected to the state of Israel, that are actively acting in the sense of the interest of the Israeli Zionist state at the expense of the host countries, which is provable, just like Whitney's proved 1,000 times over. And by the way, had their own government say publicly that they can legislate anywhere in the world, right? We don't follow international law. They've said it more than once. He says, we're now going to promote the establishment of classes taught by our police forces, not for the police, for civilians, Jewish communities all over the world, which means in the United States, they're going to create little classrooms where they're going to teach Jewish people that they're supposed to be afraid of everybody because they all hate you. And Zionist is the only thing you can believe in. That's my opinion. But the reality is these people are not good people. Ben-Gavir is a lunatic, even according to people in the Israeli communities, even according to their own government. He's an extremist, and he's the one talking about setting up classrooms to re-educate people in the world to teach. I mean, this is terrifying. That's what this is about. Against the escalation of hate demonstrations, because they're using the lies about these colleges protesting for freedom and self-determination and using that to roll this into another program. He's promoting a police program for training, transfer professional knowledge, and establish local alert classes in Jewish communities around the world. He says, it's our national duty and historical duty to stand with the right of prosecuted Jews. You know, unless they're Palestinian Jews, unless they're Ethiopian Jews, unless they look slightly different than us, unless they're not Zionist, unless they wear their hat wrong. Like, it's absurd. Clearly, you don't support all Jews. You support Zionist Jews, and that's it. So it's not about Judaism. It's about Zionism. Just another, I'm going to skip this, and I keep jumping into it. The point is, Rabbi Shmuley, I was going to highlight the fact that this guy is lost the support of his own community. Just look at his own reach, because he's crazy. And everyone has recognized that. The guy is he's the belligerent Zionist out there who's making all of them look crazy. And he's even been called out by Rebel News. He's been called out by other people in his community going, look, you're hurting our agenda, man. And he only goes harder. So here he is sitting with a room full of children, which is pretty weird to me. Not that he's sitting in a room full of children, but what he says doing that, he's in a room full of children and he just breaks out his phone and starts talking about how he just watched that horror snuff film for the second time. Why? Why are you in front of a room full of kids talking about the Hamas snuff film that you claim proves everything that we've now seen has been lied about in every possible way? And why in the world would you casually watch that twice and then talk about it in a room full of children? This guy is deranged, man. I'm telling you. And that's not because he's Jewish or because he is anything other than the fact that what he does is dangerous. And his own community is calling him out for it. And the point in that in general is about how their narrative is simply that they are the reason Jews are safe. But what they do makes Jews unsafe. That's the point. And here is what Khaleesi pointed out. How the wives of Israeli hostages were beaten outside Netanyahu's residence in the only democracy in the Middle East. Yeah, that's real, guys. These are Israeli Jews who in fact have people kept in Gaza right now, and they're protesting Netanyahu to take Hamas's deal, which they won't tell you, which is public information if you read 972 magazine or listen to them on the ground. And guess what they do? They beat them up. They beat up the wives of the hostages. Why? Because they're protesting for a ceasefire. Look at this. They just punched her in the face. So can we go back to the statement that you support all Jews? Where was that? Oh, right here. It's our national duty to stand for the right of person. Oh, really? I guess not if they're protesting Netanyahu, right? I guess not if they have the wrong ideology. I've already made the point. It's incredible. As I said, anyone, Jews most importantly, in fact, who goes against the Zionist agenda becomes the enemy. Many large Jewish organizations have been trying to get the world to pay attention, yet they sadly get drowned out by false allegations of anti-Semitism. Yes, anti-Semitism. Zionism is not Judaism. In fact, I'll even just grab this because it's a good example of it. Ben Shapiro, right in the beginning of this, denigrating Jews. Why? Because they didn't wear the thing the right way that he said, and because they have a different opinion. Useful idiots for Hamas. These trash people don't know how to wear the talit. This is Jewish Voices for Peace. Jews say ceasefire now is what their shirts say. And all he can do is denigrate them. Trash. It just shows you he is a Zionist. Not if this is a person who is, I mean, that's not acceptance. That's disgusting. You can at least go, I disagree with their opinion. But no, you have to go farther than that. Why? Because you have a bigger agenda. And to end in general, anyone, as I've said the whole time, who steps even slightly out of line, you're an enemy now. All right. So the point is that even though Israel has been screaming about how they want a two-state solution, even though we know now they've always lied about that, and the reality has finally come out, and people finally listen to the truth, the proof about the poison pills and the Oslo Accords, everything else, they've intentionally tried to stop it, which, by the way, if you've never heard that, obviously one of the points is important to point out. Where was that? Is that if Israel, which they did, and Haaretz reported, funded Hamas, and they stated that anyone that wants to thwart that two-state solution needs to transfer money to Hamas, and we realize that, well, it's obvious they never want a two-state solution because they put the group in place that they then use to say, we can't do it because of the group that we put in place. But they don't say that last part, right? It's obvious.
So are you saying Benjamin Netanyahu deliberately boosted Hamas to try to prevent a Palestinian state?
Yeah, sure. He deliberately and systematically even told on record, whoever wants to avoid the threat of a two-state solution has to support my policy of paying protection money to the Hamas.
So what we did, with the permission of our prime minister, is to let Qatar to transfer a huge amount of money in cash, probably more than $1.4 billion. By doing it, we increased the power of Hamas. We did everything in order to make sure that Hamas will go on controlling.
The point is they did not want to allow it, so they manufactured a reason to not. And that either blew up in their face or they used it in the same way on October 7th for something else. You could decide for yourself. But either way, you can't stand back and pretend like you're at some war with the group you put in place and you funded. And the reality is it's $1.5 billion, not humanitarian aid, money. That's not the lie that was somehow for humanitarian aid. I've said this every time. So if you need to bring in aid, which they do, because you cannot bring in enough food or make enough food in Gaza because Israel made that the case, there's not aid to buy there. It has to be brought in. So when you give them billions of dollars, that's not for aid. That's That's objectively obvious. So they gave them money for weapons. That's the whole point, guys. They gave them money for what they needed to fight to be the very thing they are today. Or rather what they were then. And the point is, I think it's changed over the years. But either way, here is the representative of the UN mindlessly reading whoever wrote whatever for him is in front of him. And I'll show you that. But it says the Israeli occupation delegate says if a decision to grant full membership to Palestinian Nazi state, how stupid, is approved, this will be a council of terrorism. Like, think about how childish that is. So if they vote for Palestine to have a state, which is what you've said you've always wanted, now every one of them are terrorists, which means that the word terrorism is meaningless. That's how they use everything. You're old anti-Semites if you disagree with us. So anti-Semitism means nothing if you do that. So if you're going to deem them all terrorists, even though that's closer than they want, it's more accurate than they think, it means terrorism is meaningless. But that's how these people are. The people like this, not every Israeli or every Jew, but these maniac Zionists are, it's like I've said before, it's like it's people that have gotten to power that didn't truly earn it for the right reasons, that they're belligerent, they are childish, they are small, and they attack anybody that goes against them, and they are emotional in their reactions. It's just, it's everything we see in groups that are not, shouldn't be respected. And I'm not talking about average people. I'm talking about the specific leadership of Zionism. Now, this is what he actually says, and it's crazy to me.
National law and the UN Charter are only important when they can be weaponized against Israel.
No, the reality is it's only important when you can use it against your enemies. You never listen to the UN when you don't like what they say. But here he is just saying this. And you know what's funny is everyone in this room knows that. Everyone sitting there is like, you're ridiculous. We all know you ignore everything you say. We know what you're doing right now is trying to act like for the camera that you're the only moral person in the room. Only the Jew sitting here, that's the whole point of the Zionist manipulation, somehow is the only victim in anything. That's what they do. That's not my opinion. The point is that they're creating that when the rest of the people in the room are going, we know that's not true. So it's just embarrassing that he stands here and acts like you're all bad guys if you don't do exactly what I say.
But if breaking the law means advancing the unilateral establishment of a Palestinian terror state, a Palestinian Nazi state.
Okay, but I thought we were talking about Palestinians being the ones you're trying to save and that Hamas was the bad guy. Oops. This whole conversation has exploded that narrative because what you're doing here is clearly conflating both of those. They're not talking about a Hamas state. They're talking about a Palestinian state. They don't want that. So all they do is go, you can't allow a Palestinian Nazi state. Well, wait a minute. I thought you were protecting the Palestinians from Hamas. Oops.
Then by all means, they're just empty words on paper, right? What this council has decided to focus on at the expense of all other calamities around the globe is to grant a prize to terrorists. Granting the perpetrators and supporters.
So is that what you were doing 2 years ago when you pretended you wanted that? I mean, think about how ridiculous that is. If anybody who has even the slightest memory can laugh about that, because they were saying Hamas was bad then. So there's really the only thing that's different is the situation has changed with the world. And so now they just pretend it was never like that, even though they know, well, you can simply look it up.
Of October 7th, full membership status in the UN is the vilest reward for the vilest crimes.
For Hamas. But we're talking about Palestinians here. You guys are clearly acknowledging in every possible way that you see them all as terrorists. And that's been the point from day one. They denied it because they knew it was wrong. They don't care. They know it was wrong, though. They know we think it's wrong. So they've lied about it. But now it doesn't matter. I think they realize that.
If this resolution passes, God forbid, this council should no longer be known as the Security Council, but as the Terror Council.
I mean, people should have laughed at him when he said that. Not because I don't think most of the people in that room are probably pretty bad people. I'm simply saying that it's a childish statement. It really is. It's conflating. It's just childish. It is small. It is a low intellect statement, in my opinion. But here's what's funny about this. Here is what he has on his paper, which pretty much makes my point for me. First of all, somebody with gigantic type wrote this out for him. He's just blindly reading what's on there. I doubt he even made this himself, my opinion. But look what it says here. The mask comes off and the gloves must come on. Just for the record, the statement is the gloves must come off. So he's just confusing two statements right there. It just shows these people aren't that bright. My personal opinion, but I think that speaks for itself. But they're the ones in control, apparently. Ken Klippenstein points out the Biden admin is quietly pressuring countries to vote against the Palestinian statehood, literally while they stand up and say, we still want Palestinian statehood. There's even a clip going around saying, we voted against this because we X, Y, and Z, freedom, Israel, fighting back, right to respond, then go on to say, but we still support a two-state solution. Like clown world. The absolute epitome of clown world. You vote against two-state solution, then say you want it, because that's the game. They just let it out of the bag because he had to vote against it because whatever Israel's pressuring, but they need to keep pretending they want it because that's what Israel's doing. This is how obvious it is. This is just another the Intercept site leaking a memo or citing a leaked memo that shows you that they have very clearly have instructions directly from Israel, showing you clearly again that the Zionist government basically controls in many ways what your government does and says, not to use the word Palestine, except in very rare cases. And it's an older video they did on February 28th. It shows them like clumsily trying not to say it, even though they start like to say, they start with P and then they just deviate. Oops, I'm not supposed to say Palestine. Why do you think that is? Here's Senator John Fetterman, who, by the way, is just it's embarrassing. Like if you actually compare the things he's tweeting these days with what he was saying right before October 7th, clearly somebody is giving him things to say, which is pretty common for senators anyway. But I think you know what I mean. He writes, zero shock that 100 plus Israeli hostages are, quote, still unaccounted for the UN is considering Palestinian membership. It's not how he talks. The same UN that can't even condemn Hamas, which you mean despite the fact that they've condemned Hamas like 45 times since it started. But let's just ignore that because you're just relaying whatever Israel told you to say. Hamas stated in its own this entire catastrophe. Hamas stated and owns this entire catastrophe. I'm sorry, started. And owns the entire catastrophe and could end this now by sending hostages home. Well, sure. So could you by accepting their deal. It's a meaningless statement because by sending them home, they're not getting anything in return. But either way, the point is all you're doing by saying this is bad is the same thing he was doing. As a senator for the U.S. government, which is still mind-blowing to me, who can't even speak properly, you are conflating all of Palestine with Hamas, which is exactly what we've always told you they're doing. And again, I bet you he doesn't even know this was posted, to be quite honest. But just to end, I want you guys to recognize the West Bank. It's not just Gaza, which we've been saying, and anybody who knows the situation has been saying before October 7th, but well after it. It's gotten wild. 972 magazine author Mariv Zonzain says settlers killing Palestinians in occupied West Bank is becoming normalized as soldiers are doing so. It's just, it's the cat's out of the bag. It's open. And your governments are still denying it. This is Ahmed Tabi, MD, saying, this is my home of Tulkarm, where my family has been under military siege for the past 48 hours. It's not Gaza. It's the West Bank. The IDF kidnapped dozens of youths from the city during the invasion. Israeli occupation of West Bank is illegal. Israeli settlements in West Bank are illegal. Both of which are still happening and have always been the case. But we don't see this on the news, do you? You don't see this even on the corporate media pretending to care about the truth. They're literally kidnapping random people from the West Bank. They're already destroying parts of the West Bank. They're still building illegal settlements. It never stopped. It's only gotten worse. And Common Dreams writes, damning independent probe finds Israel has yet to provide evidence against UNRWA. And now Elon Levy in particular and plenty of others have started pushing really hard after this to make the argument yet again that I can't believe they're going. Even Germany has started funding UNRWA again. You know why? Because they produced literally nothing, conjecture and evidence-free claims. The U.S., Canada, everybody said that, even their allies. That's pretty embarrassing. Lens Veritas points out I'm going to talk about this more. There's obviously a lot of discussion around the building of like tent cities around this, preparing for the Rafah invasion. All these Israeli media platforms are saying it's about to happen. But I've got this weird sense, like, you know my opinion. I've already made it very clear. It's concerning to me, the entire concept of what Rafah represents and the massacre that will happen there. And my reporting before was like, I feel like it's inevitable because the U.S. isn't doing anything about it. But there's been a new conversation circulating about whether this might never happen. That's in no way to hide the fact that they're capable of it, they would do it, or that they've committed endless amounts of massacres before this, the ongoing genocide. My point is, I don't want to be part of a useful part of the fact that they can, whenever they want, go, Rafah's about to happen. And we all go, Rafah's about to happen. And then I feel like that's used almost a way to pressure the U.S. government. So I just don't want to end up being a tool of what their propaganda is, even though we know it's pending. So if something does begin to happen now, you know I'll report on it. But I'm worried about how that keeps getting used. But nonetheless, Rafah assault imminent is the story we're getting from Israel Times and a lot of places. And there is backed imagery showing that they're building something and they're denying that, which I find interesting. Muhammad Safa makes the point regardless. And this is what I've been saying from the beginning. Whether or not they're invading, they've been bombing the area since there have been people there. So it's really kind of a lie in the first place, guys. They've been bombing civilians in Rafah, even though there's no plan that they claim they need before they invade, but they're bombing them. So where are they supposed to go? There's nowhere else to go. They're bombing fish in a barrel. It's packed full of civilians. Nobody cares about that. As Mohammed points out, Rafah's being decimated. There's nowhere left to go. Israel's now bombing more than 1.7 million civilians trapped in Rafah. Gaza's last place of refuge. A massacre is happening in Rafah. Not because of the invasion, but it already is. April 23rd. So we'll leave it there today. I think it's important, guys, that we recognize just how transparent all of this is. The reality of what your governments don't want you to see. The truth of the, I mean, already there's enough that's happened that makes this inevitable. That should, if there's any truth in this world, any goodness, at some point this will be held accountable. And I believe there is. I truly believe that. I believe that all of us here in our community and everything we're doing, I believe we're making a difference. And I believe that every time we stand up and speak out, that it ripples through the world. And it's every one of you too. And everything that we do, I believe that we change the actions of people by being the change. And I don't want to use that statement as the cliche that it is, but the reality of what it comes from, which is that if we change the tendencies in ourselves, the tendencies of the world will also change. That's the real quote. And I believe that. And I believe that we're doing that with everything that we do. And I think that ultimately we will see some kind of accountability here because there's too many people that have recognized how crazy this is. And it's gotten much bigger than the obvious genocide. It's now implicating historical events because it's always been there. The reality has always been there. So thank you for joining me today, guys. My plan is to pretty much work as much as I can, like every day if possible over the next week and just trying to get caught up. But I can't promise that only because there's still a lot going on. This whole room that we're in right now, which I'd love to show you, it's a huge space. It's going to be, we have to build out the walls and put carpet and all sorts of stuff, and I have to build it out. And in regard to my moving in general, I'm still surrounded by a bunch of boxes. So there's just a lot that needs to get done, and I have to take care of myself and my family and my dog and so on. But that's all just to say that it might not happen. My plan is still the same. I'm going to be doing everything I can to put up shows as much as possible. I'm going to be putting up that interview most likely tomorrow. I think it's a good day for it anyway with Adam Green. Make sure you check that out. I'll be putting up some new stuff on our Substack as well. Another Arna Burkhart clip from Taylor. And I have actually some new articles coming from Zoe, who wrote the Death Cult article already, and a book as well, but the article for TLAV on the Substack. And she's got some really good stuff coming your way. And I believe I'm going to be interviewing her as well in May. There's plenty more coming your way, guys. So thank you for your support. The Give, Send, Go, by the way, I mentioned last time. It does appear, by the way, make sure this spreads to the community because I don't want to, what I said very clear before is I wasn't sure. I didn't want to make it sound as if I thought Gibson Go was doing something. They've been really responsive with me. Nonetheless, I was worried about it because it seemed kind of hard to miss, but it does now appear that it's a bank thing. According to the people I've spoken with, that ultimately it's from, and that concerns me even more, to be honest, that the people are trying to donate recurring donations through the Gibson Go. And that the banks are turning it down because it's tagged to TLAV, which is just, that's the world we're stepping into. And that's why we need to keep fighting, guys. And so I think at the end of the day, if you want to support us there, please continue to do so. Just check with your bank, make sure they're not canceling it. But any of the other number of ways you can support us, all the links down below. Because, you know, as I've said, I promise, I will make sure that this won't be leaving my mind. It just will probably be a long time until this happens. If it does happen, if we end up having to go to court, which it seems like that's going to happen, which is what the Gibson Go was started for, it's the date that they have arbitrarily set right now is something like, I think it was March 2025. Like that's how ridiculous our court system is. The point is that I'm actively advised by my lawyer not to get into details because of how that might affect the outcome. But I promise you, and I just like I said with the Burkhardt interview, what people thought wasn't going to come out, that I will break this down for you. I want you guys, I would love to talk about it right now because I want people to know who this group is. But I'm going to talk about the actual company. I'm going to talk about the actual law firm. I'm going to talk about what it is and what I think is happening. But I need to wait and see if we can actually flush this out. My point, though, is that there's still lots of lawyer fees and lots of things happening that I will, and just the general day-to-day of this platform. So if you'd like to support us, if you believe in what we're doing, and you'd like to help us fight off the attacks that I think are unjust, there's plenty of ways to do so below. Thank you for being here, guys. I appreciate your support more than you know. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Let me preface these remarks with I never, ever believe Israeli figures.